Super Bowl kickoff in a couple of hours. One man who is down there who is very, very excited, not only because he gets to go to the Super Bowl, but because he is in the inaugural class of the Ford Hall of Fans at the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio. Don Wachter is Bear Man, and he is with us on WGN. Don, welcome. First of all, congratulations. This is an unbelievably cool honor.
Yes, thanks, Brian. That's my crowd here.
Yes.
It is an unbelievable honor. Just the pinnacle of everything, you know. I can't explain how excited I am about this.
It has to be, because listen, there's all kinds of fans, and you are without question a Bears super fan. You've been a season ticket holder for 34 years.
Right.
How did the look evolve to, because for those of you who haven't seen Don at a Bears game, just Google Bear Man. But anybody who's been to Soldier Field has seen you, because for a while you were the Bears had you carrying flags out on the field.
Right.
You're a fixture in the north end zone. You know, I remember seeing you back before you had the Bear Man jersey, when you just had the plank jersey. How did this whole road of your crazy fandom begin?
Well, I guess just maybe the late 80s, I started waving flags, you know, that I bought, you know, flags. And then I always wanted to take it to a next level. Then I started doing face paint with, Bears helmet. Then I went to these color punk rock wigs that they sold in the costume shops, and I went to that. But I always, I really love the Bears logo, the growling bear. I love that logo, and wanted to try to do something to, you know, to show that. And, I went to a costume shop, you know, thinking maybe they might have something that's decent, but no, they're all these cutesy, smiling, bear heads that you wore over your head and could see. So I actually seen a guy, you know, in the north end zone one day. He had basically a bearskin rug, and he had it, you know, on his head and his back, and like, wow, that's kind of interesting. He didn't really, you know, have much any costume besides that, and I just seen him once, and that gave me an idea. Then, I went, called up a couple of taxidermist shops and inquired if they had any. And one in Palatine did, a smaller black bear. And I went there, and good price I bought it. And I was too embarrassed to ask the taxidermist, you know, or tell what I wanted to use it for.
Right.
You know, as far as, hey, could I cut the head off the rest of the rug and wear it on my head? But I tried it. It was mounted on plywood, and I had a friend help me cut the plywood off and scoop out the styrofoam and put a strap on it. And Bear Man was born in, like, November of the 96 season. And the costume evolved, too, from that. You know,
sure.
I mean, at first, you know, it was just a bear head, painted face, plank jersey. And, you know, I wore jeans. Then I started wearing two pants and pants. I actually wore the fur, the actual fur on my arms, until that kind of started to disintegrate. So I got fake fur, added claws, added feet, and you know, then pants, you know, regular football pants with fur on the legs and shoulder pads. So yeah, but that then even went to, you know, my jersey saying Bear Man. I kind of, you know, then started to call myself Bear Man in the early, you know, 2000s.
And how did it evolve to the Bears having you carry the flag for those years?
Well, yeah, that was actually an interesting story. I mean, in the 97 season, I was kind of getting some attention. That's, you know, the first full season I wore the bear head. And I was actually in two Miller Lite commercials called the Miller Lite Rapid Fan. And NFL Films came to me during one of the games and said, hey, we're making these commercials. We'd like to feature you. We're going to be showing across the country. Just at the 2-minute warning of that game that they were showing that day. So, but then after the season, my friends and family would say, well, you should write the Bears, and maybe they'd give you a job to be on the field or go through the stands to get the crowd pumped in. And after the 97 season, I wrote Ken Feldisseri, who was the director of communications. I didn't think I would get any response. And by God, in 2 weeks, he wrote me back because he knew, you know, that they used me on to cover their calendar one year in 96.
Oh, geez.
But I had before the bear head. And he invited me to the fan convention to talk to him, and then at the Hallis Hall in June, they said, well, you know, we have an opening to run with one of the flags. He said, we don't want to make you really the official mascot, the real bearhead. They were a little bit concerned about the feet of people.
Sure.
And I did that from the 98 season all the way through Champagne in the costume.
That's amazing. Now, Ford is doing this Hall of Fans. This is, you are in the inaugural class.
Yes.
How did the nomination process work? How did it come to the point where you're in Atlanta today and you found out you're going in? You're going to be in Canton, Ohio. What did somebody nominate you? How did this all happen?
Yeah, started in October where Ford actually contacted the Bears and said, hey, you know, we're having this new contest. Going to have a new exhibit at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Can you give us the name of, let's say, three of your ultimate fans? And, you know, the Bears, you know me very well. They have a lot of information on me, pictures they have. And then I gave them some information. So they sent it to Ford, and there was a Ford, they looked it over, and about a week or two, they said, yes, we want to pursue this further. I had to send a video of myself at one of the games to kind of demonstrate, my ultimate fandom. And then after that, they said, well, we want to do this further even. So they said, we're going to send a film crew, from Bleacher Report to film you at your house, interview you to see if you would be a nominee. And they sandbagged me. So early December, they came at 9 in the morning. They were there for several hours without me being in bear band and me put in the face paint. Then they start the interview with me in the bear man costume. And halfway through it was a large knock on the door. And they told me to open it up. There's Brian Urlacher in all his fame and glory, standing
man.
At my front door with his golden jacket.
Wow.
And and I went crazy. And he said, Don, you have been nominated for Bear Man. You've been nominated for the Ford Hall of Fame. So they already, knew that I was going to be a nominee before they told me. But, Brian surprised me. So, the contest started December 30th online. You had to vote.
Sure.
Up to January 27th. So, and they judged me on three different. Well, there was one third of the judging was on how many votes I got.
Okay.
One third was from a panel of four. Judge ranked me 1 through 10 on my ultimate fandom, and then also a panel from the Ford Hall of Fame ranked me 1 through 10. So then the three highest scored people were sent to the Super Bowl. We always knew that,
right?
We came here Thursday, and we were, the contest rules that only one of us would get a knock on the door from David Baker, the president of the Hall of Fame. And Thursday night, they still told us, hey, be in your hotel room between 8:30 and 9:30, and somebody's going to get a knock on their door. I couldn't sleep.
I was going to say, did you sleep at all Thursday night?
Hardly at all. I mean, and then, that half an hour between 8:39 was grueling, Brian. I mean, it was grueling because I'm thinking, why isn't somebody knocking on my door?
Yeah, I can't imagine.
I kind of thought I was a front runner. I did. I mean, I had a lot of confidence. A lot of people were telling me, all Bear Nation were saying, man, you got this, Don. Bear Man, you were the best one. But then, we got surprised when he knocked on the door that, he told us that all three of us made it. So I guess Ford maybe all along wanted to put three of us in there, not just one.
Well, it's a good way to start. The inaugural class is three people. Now, I've watched the video. I expected you to be sleeping in full makeup on Thursday night, waiting just in case. Now, you had the Bear Man jersey, and you had your Bears hat and all your gear, but you decided no actual bear head or face paint for the Thursday night.
It was strange that people... Run, the people doing the event here from Florida actually told me not to bring it, not to wear it.
Okay.
I was kind of disappointed. They said, well, there's no time for that, because we got to go to the Hall of Fame luncheon right after this, which was a special treat, at 11 o'clock, going with 80 Hall of Famers, and they introduced us to the whole crowd of Hall of Famers, as these, those three, four Hall of Fans seem to be inducted, showed the video of us, so. I bet Dan Hampton there and Mike Singletary, those were the two Bear Hall of Famers there.
Sure.
But, I was a little bit disappointed that I couldn't wear it, but definitely will be in costume, Brian, between August 1st and 4th in Canton, Ohio.
Yes.
When they unveil the new exhibit. So I'll be in all my glory then.
That's going to be unbelievable. Have they told you what it's going to look like, what it's going to be like? Because all the reports I've read said they haven't really finalized or released that to the public. Do you know what's going to happen?
They're still working on that. But Brian, I will give you a little bit of hint. Maybe I'm not supposed to do this.
I won't tell anybody.
I found out last night. And get this: us three are going to get blue jackets, blazers. That's a sport blue. So
yeah.
We actually are going to get jackets, you know, like the Hall of Famers, but they're going to be blue.
Oh man. Did you ever in your wildest dreams when you started going to Bears games you've been a Bears fan even before you had season tickets, but when you started dressing up, when you started doing this, could you ever have imagined that it would come to this?
No, Brian, because, I was kind of a shy kid, grew up on a farm in Northwest Indiana, went to a small high school, I got very good grades, finished the top 11th of my class, but still, I was kind of an introvert, so forth, didn't play sports. And this Bear man is just like an ultra ego of mine. I just had no imagine that it would come this far. I mean, to me, I've been telling people, I'm not married, I don't have any kids. I mean, I got a bachelor's and a master's degree, but this is actually a bigger accomplishment than that in my eyes.
I would, and this is not a knock on education, I would have to agree, because if you have the smarts and the wherewithal, you can go to college and get your degrees.
Right.
Most of us, almost none of us, are going to get into the Hall of Fans.
It's going to be very hard. I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, who knows? I could be the only Bear fan to be in this hall, because there's not going to be, there's a lot of fans they're going to have to, go through. So, here's the other thing, I thought it's fitting, too, that, the Bears are celebrating their 100th season this coming season.
Right.
The NFL is celebrating coming season. The Bears have the most players in the Hall of Fame, 28. What's more fitting to put a Bear fan in the Hall of Fame on the 100th anniversary? So that's, I kind of look at it that way, too.
Yeah, it all works out together. I should ask, who are the other two fans that are inducted with you?
Rick Holman from the Pittsburgh Steelers and Roger Avila from the Miami Dolphins.
Very nice. Now, were they as surprised when you, I know you've talked to them, that you all got in? Because obviously this was Ford's plan, but you guys all thought it was,
buried. They were very surprised. They were kind of even kidding with me, that I was going to be the one. They kind of thought I was going to be the one to make it just because of the kind of, the fame I've got more so than the other two,
it's amazing.
The one, that really just stood out in the contest with the costume and the look and identity. So, the other two were very, very happy.
Oh, sure. You also said one of the criteria was, they came to the house. Now, I've seen footage of your house. I saw Dion from Channel 7 was at your house.
Right.
It's not just Sundays where you tend to go over the top for your Bears fan. You live basically in a shrine to the Bears and drive a shrine to the Bears.
Oh, yes. Yes, exactly. I mean, even the actual Bear, my I got a small place, but my downstairs is kind of a tribute to the grizzly bear. I love bears, black bears, so I got all bears up then. Upstairs is all the Chicago Bears. Then my Bearola, the Toyota Corolla, I call the Bearola. Brian, it has nine, bear heads on the roof that represent the nine championships. It has a bear in front, and it has 132 decals, bear-related decals, all over it.
That is amazing.
And, I also got every number for every Bear Hall of Famer. All the 28 Hall of Famers are on it. So,
well, Don, no one can question your fandom. And being
Thank
inducted
you.
Into the Ford Hall of Fans in the inaugural class is well, well deserved. So now you're down there. Have you been to a Super Bowl before, or is this your first one?
No, it's my first one, unfortunately, was the Miami Super Bowl 41, where I got drenched. I was dressed in bear, but that's actually the time my bear had ever got that wet before. Yeah, I experienced. So this is the second one. So,
but this one you're being treated as an MVP. It's got to
exactly.
be exciting.
Yeah.
And
$2,250 these tickets are.
Wow. Now who's been hanging around the hotel? Have you hobnobbed with? You mentioned the Hall of Fame luncheon where you got to see Singletary and Dan Hampton.
Right.
Anybody hanging around the lobby of your hotel of note?
Oh, yes. Get this. Robbie Gould and Kyle Long. Robbie Gould was up for the Walter Payton Award, so we stayed in there. So I talked to him a couple times saying how bad we wanted back.
Yeah, did you ask him if he's going to come back?
Get this, Brian. I'm sorry. I was in the lobby, and Kyle Long seen me from the restaurant, yelled Bear Man at me, and came out and congratulated me.
Oh, man.
You know, I wasn't in the, you know, not in the Bear Man costume.
Sure.
He came out, and, you know, then I see Trey Burton this morning. Ed Reed, you know, he was staying in our hotel who got inducted. Adidas Williams with the Cardinals, but yeah, there's a lot of players there.
It is amazing, and the players know you, the team knows you, and anybody who's been at Soldier Field knows you. Don, congratulations! Enjoy the game today, and we'll talk to you as the summer gets closer when you head out to Canton to get the blue blazer.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Take care, Don. My pleasure. Congrats again. Give us a growl on the way out.
All right.
There you go. That's Don Wachter. He is Bear Man. He is in the inaugural class of the Ford Hall of Fans. He will be inducted in Canton, Ohio this summer, along with two other fans. So very, very exciting. That is very cool. All right, let's do this, and then we will do more. Why? Because we're here till 7. It's WGN. All right, on the other side of the news, Josh Noel from the Tribune. He writes about beer for the Trib. We will talk about something I would have never thought in a million years to purchase, store brand beers. So we'll talk about all of that on the other side, because that's our brand, Cody. I don't know, you know, the kids always talk about being on brand, and I think talking about beer is that's on brand for this program. Would you agree?
It is.
We are on brand. Are you proud of me that I know what that means?
No,
because I should know what that means.
No, it's because no one should be proud of knowing things like that.
Exactly. It means nothing to anyone. I know you are not a huge sports fan. But we were just talking to Don Wachter, and that's a great story. That is, you know, every huge fan's dream has now come true for Don. One, he's gotten to be part of the team that he's a huge fan for, and now he's getting worldwide recognition to be in the Ford Hall of Fame. I know you don't go to a lot of sporting events. You do dress up for your GeekCon. Or your weirdo convention in the summertime, Gen Con. I know people are going to send me horrible emails now. Would you ever dress up for a sporting event or a theater event when you go to see the composer, when you go to see those things? Do you dress up?
No, I see people that do, and they're fun, and they add to the ambiance.
Yeah.
Like when I saw The Legend of Zelda Symphony of the Goddesses.
Sure, of course.
At the Auditorium Theater, lots of people dressed up like Zelda and Link and all the characters. And it's fun. It adds and it's fun for the performers, too. I talked to some of the people in the Indianapolis Symphony when I saw Video Games Live in 2006.
Okay.
And I asked them, I'm like, you know, what do you think when they hand you sheet music and they say, oh, you're playing music from Halo? And they said, you know, at first it's kind of odd, but first of all, the music is surprisingly good, and second of all, it's so fun because the crowd gets so into it, and the crowd will cheer and freak out when they start playing music pieces, and that doesn't really happen with like Shostakovich.
No, not at all.
So much.
I rarely dress up like Mozart when I go to the symphony,
but sometimes,
yeah, occasionally. But I do that at home. But I've back in college, I went to all the SIU football games and the basketball games, and I got to a point where I started wearing one of those rainbow Afro wigs. Just because you know I hate the spotlight and I hate attention.
Of course.
So I would wear this, and I was the only guy sitting around. So I'd wear that in a Saluki shirt, and I started getting the nickname Big Fan because I was big. So Big Fan, they did a profile on Big Fan on the WSIU TV, and then SIU was playing for the 1AA National Championship in football in Charleston, South Carolina. So Big Fan and his friends made a road trip down to Charleston for the game. And as we're at the stadium, and I'm in my, it was just a t-shirt, like a regular SIU t-shirt, but the wig. Of course, this is back before people went completely over the top. And I remember walking around, and the dean came around the corner, and he was like, "Big fan!" I mean, that is a minuscule percentage of what Don goes through all the time. And you've never been to a Bears game, right?
Not the Bears, no.
He's been there for 34 years, and I've seen the costume evolve just the few times that I've been there over the last 10, 15 years. It's crazy. And there's no doubt you know where Don is sitting, because you can't miss him. He's about my height, our height, and he's got a giant bear head on.
Yeah.
And fur up on his arms and legs and claws and paws and the whole deal.
I experienced a fair amount of that kind of thing in college because I played for the Drake University band.
Oh, very nice.
And I was in the marching band. So yeah. The football games weren't as crazy, but it's a Division I team.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the men went to the Final Four in, the 60s once ever. But
still, there's, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, there were some fans and some people in the pep band that really became like these personalities.
Well, it's fun and it doesn't hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing. Why not celebrate joy? Because there are always people who are going to look and go, "What a weirdo! Why is he doing that? Why is she getting all excited? Why is that girl at Northwestern screaming?" You know why she's screaming? Because she's filled with joy, and there's nothing wrong. I don't know what that feels like, but I would imagine if you're full of joy, you want to let it out.
Mm-hmm.
And fine with me. Enjoy.
I'm all for it.
You know what I enjoy? After a dry January.
What's that, Brian?
Fun February, and I need a beer. Maybe I need a cheap beer, Cody, because I'm not made of money.
Nice transition, Brian.
Thanks. Shows on once a week. Maybe I'm looking for cut-rate booze. Josh Noel from the Tribune will join me afterwards. We'll talk about some store-brand wines or store-brand beer that you may want to get involved in. It's 4:30 on 720 WGN. This report of news is sponsored by White Pines Resort. Here's Pam Jones. Brian Noonan, 720 WGN. If you know one thing about this program, you know we like beer. We talk about beer a lot. We like to imbibe in beer. Everything about beer. Another man who likes beer a lot. And you know how he likes beer a lot? Because he writes about beer for the Chicago Tribune, and he is the author of Barrel Age Stout and Selling Out, Goose Island, Anheuser-Busch, and How Craft Beer Became Big Business. Josh Noel joins us right now on WGN. Josh, am I saying your last name correctly?
Yeah, Noel will work either way, honestly. No one likes that answer, but that's fine.
Yeah, that's the one answer that most people will say, oh, here's a definitive answer. But, all right, well, we'll just say Josh for now. I enjoy reading your stuff in the Trib because it always opens my eyes up to some new things. This week, no exception, because I think, like many people, I've walked through different grocery stores, and Aldi or Costco or even Walmart, and I've seen beer there that at first glance you go, oh, that's X brand, because it looks like it might be a popular brand that we've all bought. And then upon closer inspection, you go, no, that's not that at all. It's some sort of store brand. Is this a recent thing that these chains have started doing their own private label beers?
It's not recent. Trader Joe's has been at it for a while, and they're really the best known for it. You walk into Trader Joe's, there's going to be probably 15 or 20 brands you won't find anywhere else, which is very on brand for Trader Joe's, right?
Sure. Oh,
Trader,
yeah.
Joe's salsa and wine and chips and fruit, everything. So
yeah.
No reason it shouldn't extend to the beer, but it's just it sort of looks different and almost a little screwy, because we're just so used to. We see it's Bud and Miller. Those are the commercials we're going to see in the Super
Exactly.
Bowl today. And then, Kraft, Goose Island in Chicago and Revolution. But then you walk into Trader Joe's and you see these brands that you've quite possibly never seen before in your life.
Exactly.
And you're like, well, what is this? And so, but to your point, Aldi has gotten pretty strong in that game now as well. And then you've seen Walmart has experimented with it. Costco has played around in that space. Walgreens even got into it, so they discontinued their brand. But it's a way for them. It sort of works for the stores because they can do it on the cheap, and then it works for the customers because we can get the beer cheaper as private labels. The problem, and what sort of got me going on this story in the first place, was just the simple question of which of these are good and which of these are not.
Right.
You generally get what you pay for, right? But not always. And there are some really good deals to be found there, and some of them were absolutely dreadful. And so I drank through 30 of the brands to see what I can see.
Well, see, because just, and I know this is, well, now I know after reading your piece that this is wrong. I just immediately assumed that these were all horrible and I would never have picked them up. You know, now I'm going to try some because of what I read. But is that, how do these companies overcome that hurdle? Because most, you know, there's some people who are going to drink whatever just because it's cheap. There are some people.
Yeah,
who...
no, I think you just nailed it. Cheap.
Okay,
that's how they deal with it. Is they're just these beers offer really strong value. The problem is that a lot of them also offer not so good beer. But again, I sort of assumed that there had to be some gems in there. And that's what got me going in the first place. But you're right. A lot of them, probably more than half, are probably just not worth your time or your money, no matter how cheap it is. But there are a handful that are really nicely made beers that if you just need something dependable in the fridge or something to bring to a party that doesn't cost, you know, too much money, I mean, there are some winners in that stack.
Before we get into the list of what we should drink and what we should avoid, these are all contract brews, right? So where do these places find the breweries that are actually making the beer for them?
That's an important point. So the people who are actually making the beer, their identity is nowhere to be found on these beers.
Okay.
That's sort of the point, is it's supposed to come off as just this exclusive Trader Joe's brand. Even if it's not branded as Trader Joe's, you won't find it anywhere else. But it's meant to evoke sort of this identity away from the company that's actually making it. That said, if you dig a little bit, you can generally figure it out. So back in the day, which we'll say, let's say 10 years ago, contract-made beer, which, you know, is beer made by a company as another brand,
right,
was pretty, pretty bad. But with the craft beer revolution, we're seeing incredible progress on the contract brew front. So some of these beers are really quite good. But you know, some of the old standards are like Minhas Brewery in Monroe, Wisconsin, Point Brewing up in Stevens Point, okay, Wisconsin. They're sort of all over the place.
And
some are big names and some are not.
So some of them are making beers under their own labels too, right? It's not, they're not, or are they all doing just contract stuff? Well, I know Point is not, but are some,
right,
of these,
exactly,
others, are they just in the contract business?
Some are. So there's Great Central Brewing here in Chicago, which it was opened as a contract brewery.
Okay.
There's a brewery in Madison, Wisconsin called Octopi, which was opened as a contract brewery. And actually, they make two of the Trader Joe's brands that I really liked. But others, as you point out, like Point Brewing does a ton of contract brewing, but you'll also see Point brand beer on the market. So some are a hybrid. They do both. And some, we're starting to see more breweries opening specifically as contract breweries as well.
And do those contract breweries, are they coming up with the recipes for these beers that they're contracting out, or is somebody in R&D at Trader Joe's going, we want an IPA and we want it to have these kind of notes, and giving that to the contract brewery? How does it work?
My sense is that the breweries are really taking the lead there. Probably 5-10 years ago, the stores had very little input at all. I mean, everyone's getting a lot more savvy about beer.
Yeah.
So my guess is that Trader Joe's has someone who has a pretty good understanding of what they want and will probably have that conversation. But the breweries are the experts at making it. So they're the ones who are really sort of arriving on what to put in the can or the bottle.
All right, since you've been talking about Trader Joe's a lot, let's start with Trader Joe's. I walk in, I see the shelves lined with the beer I've never heard of before. What should I grab?
Well, a couple of the winners that I like from Trader Joe's, there's a whole line of beers from them called Joseph's Brow.
Okay.
Which is, you know, a play on Trader Joe's and sort of a German name,
sure,
you know, the Brow. And those are relatively good all in all. I really like Joseph's Brow Pilsner. They spell it P-L-Z-N-R. It's a Czech style lager. And it's made by Gordon Biersch Brewing, which is out in California.
And they do pretty good. If you've been to their restaurants or stuff, their beer's pretty good.
Yeah, no, they're pretty well regarded. I don't think they're not a particularly, you know, sexy name, but they're, right. but they're certainly, they've been around a long time. They know what they're doing. And so it's little wonder that this off-brand, Czech Pilsner they're making for Trader Joe's, would actually be pretty good. Another beer from them, also Gordon Biersch, also under the Joseph's Brow brand, was Joseph's Brow Radler, which is something that's going to appeal to someone who's maybe not the hardest core beer drinker. As the label says, it is a lemon beer. So it's really a beer sort of fruit juice hybrid.
Like a shandy kind of thing?
Exactly. Yep, exactly. And, you know, I'm pretty, I'll say, serious beer drinker.
Yes.
But I really, I like Joseph's Brow Radler. I thought they really, they pulled it off quite nicely. There's another, Joseph's Brow Hellerbach, which is, it's a Maibach, which is a German style. That, that appeals to a sort of the harder core beer drinkers.
Yeah, it's like an Oktoberfest kind of beer.
Yep. Yep, exactly. And that's another Gordon Biersch, and another one that's pretty well made. And then Stockyard Oatmeal Stout, which is not Gordon Biersch. Oh, no, I'm sorry, it is Gordon Biersch. It is not branded as Joseph's Brow. But Stockyard Oatmeal Stout for $6.49 for a six-pack, completely confident, well-made oatmeal stout. And none of these, are, again, are super sexy, but they're just they're well-made beers. And then I mentioned Octopi Brewing in Madison, Wisconsin. They had two of my favorites. They have one called Euphony Lager, Euphony. It's just a flawless, nice, clean lager, $5.99. I mean, it just threads the needle for what it's trying to do. And then there's another one called Cacophony, which is also Octopi. Though these are, I should point out, are not branded as Octopi. They're branded as Campanology Brewing. But again, that's just a front.
it's the shadow corporation.
Yeah, that's just Trader Joe's just wants it to be their own unique brand.
Sure.
And Cacophony is just a really nice pale ale. And it's... you know, if you got that pale, if you went to Revolution or Half Acre, one of the Chicago craft breweries with a lot of credibility, and walked in and ordered a pale ale, and they handed you that, you would not be unhappy. It is it's that good of a pale ale for, again, $5.99 for a six pack. Nice. It's not reinventing the wheel. It's just a really nicely made pale ale.
Josh Noel is with me. He is the beer writer for the Chicago Tribune and the author of Barrel Aged Stout and Selling Out, Goose Island, Anheuser-Busch, and How Craft Beer Became Big Business. You can follow him on Twitter at HopNotes. Josh, if you can hang on 1 second, we will continue this conversation, because some other stores have a couple of ones that we should pick up, and then we'll tell people a few that as they're wandering the aisles, they should avoid at all costs.
Okay, deal.
All right, let's do this. Then there's more at 720 WGN. Maybe you want to save a little money as you're going out on your way to your Super Bowl party. You might want to swing by Trader Joe's, Aldi, Costco. You've seen these beers on the shelf. Well, if you go to the Tribune, Josh Noel, who is the beer writer for the Chicago Tribune, has done the work for you. Josh, you tasted 30 of these beers, so we wouldn't have to. And the article is great because you break it down into buy it, not bad, and skip it. Now, we've talked about a lot of the buy it, and most of them were from Trader Joe's. But there was one, and again... I learned this with wine, I guess. Aldi can be surprising. So one of your other buy-its is from Aldi. Up, oh, where did I know? Oh, there we
Me.
Go. There we go. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. There I am.
I thought I'd hit the button.
The beer you reference, I'm going to put a little German accent on it. Hopefully I'm doing this right. Wernesgrüner, or if... and here in American, we might say Wernesgrüner. Wernesgrüner Pilsner, I had no expectation. I had no idea what I was getting into. Cracked it open, and it's just a delightful German Pilsner. And again, you know, the price is right, $5.99 for a six-pack. And, you know, Stella, which is owned by Anheuser-Busch, biggest beer company, or Anheuser-Busch InBev, biggest beer company in the world, they're trying to make imports this thing that has to be... you know, highfalutin and expensive at, you know, whatever Stella costs. And I'd much rather have this beer, and it's at a fraction of the cost. It's just $6 for the six pack. That was the real standout for me at Aldi. And
you had one other from Aldi in the not bad category. The one that was like a blue moon, the Kinru?
Yeah.
Kinru?
Yeah, Kinru Blue. Another one I had no expectation of and had never heard of it. And, you know, honestly, for me, it didn't really suit my taste all that much, but I will say that it was a clean and well-made beer, and that's why I would recommend it. And especially, again, to Blue Moon drinkers, that's one of the cool things about these store brands is that they present a lot of good alternatives. So,
okay.
It's, you know, if you want a cheaper and, I would say, better option than Stella, I would go with that Vernis Gruner. If you want a cheaper and, I would say, better option than Blue Moon, I would say Kinru Blue. It's a rich, flavorful beer, very orangey almost. I got sort of notes of orange sherbet off it. And that's what the style is going for. The wit beer is going to have notes of orange peel and coriander. That's the idea. And Kinru Blue is a very, a pretty richly textured version of that. So again, not something I personally would reach for, but I think people would like it. So I would recommend it if you are a Blue Moon drinker.
Now, if these beers are so good, you would think that these stores would spend a little more marketing them so that people who, maybe I don't always shop at Aldi, I'll go there every once in a while, or I'll go to Trader Joe's if I have specific things. Don't they want to try to get people, like Trader Joe's did a pretty good job with that $2 chuck, now $3 chuck. Getting people
right.
In, if they've got all this great beer, are they just hoping word of mouth is enough to move the bottles?
I think so. I think word of mouth and price, again. I mean, Trader Joe's never is hurting for people walking in the
right,
door.
Right, exactly.
And, you know, they're getting more sophisticated with their packaging and how they're talking to customers and stuff, and I assume that the beers are doing well if they're hanging around. That said, Trader Joe's is apparently phasing out its Mission Street brand, which has been around for 10, 15 years, Mission Street IPA, Mission Street Pale Ale. Those were actually really good beers back in their time.
Huh.
But they're being phased out, I guess, because they're not keeping up. I mean, there's so many good IPAs out there now, so many locally made IPAs, no matter where you are, and people are increasingly reaching for those.
Now, you had a couple from Costco, the Kirkland Signature IPA and APA. What concerned me from reading the story, they're only part of mixed packs. So are you getting beer that was not good along with these ones that you said were in the not bad category?
Correct. That's sort of the problem with the Costco craft beers. They have this mixed pack, 24-pack, which has IPA, APA, which is an American pale ale, stout, and brown ale.
Okay.
So I went into, I had to try the Costco beers.
Oh, sure.
And I was surprised that the IPA and the APA, the pale ale, I thought were both solid. I mean, I'm not, those probably do not pass the Half Acre Revolution test, which I mentioned before.
Sure.
If you walked into Half Acre and were given that IPA, you might say, Half Acre's a little off its game today. So it's not that good. But that said, it is perfectly fine. For an IPA for someone who just wants an IPA, it's a perfectly fine IPA, good enough, well made, clean, nice flavors, good for you, Costco.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the only way to get those beers is packaged with the stout and the brown ale. And I thought the stout and the brown ale were both fairly dreadful. The brown ale was just strange. And the stout was just bad. I think, as I said in the story, it's sort of like licking coffee beans. It was all out of whack and balance. So, yeah, two good ones for Costco and two not so good, and you have to buy them all together.
Yeah, that's unfortunate that you have to buy them all together.
Yeah.
Now, we've been talking a lot about Trader Joe's, and you've been a lot of your best ones were from Trader Joe's, but not every beer at Trader Joe's is a home run. As you're walking down that aisle there and you're picking up some of the other ones, what should we avoid at Trader Joe's?
Yeah, there's some definite lesser options there as well. The Simpler Times is probably the most iconic Trader Joe's brand, just because it's so cheap. It's $4 for a 6-pack.
Okay.
And it's, it's kind of a nice name, Simpler Times. It evokes a nice image. The can kind of looks nice. And It's a sort of like a nice throwback brand, but the beers are pretty dreadful. Simpler Times Lager, Simpler Times Pilsner, pass and pass. I mean, it's just there's. I'd rather spend, you know, $6 on a good to very good beer than $4 on a lousy beer.
Right.
I mean, it's just to spend the extra $2. One of the Joseph Sproul beers, so we talked about that before, made by Gordon Beer. And I thought those were pretty good across the board, but the Joseph Sproul Hefeweizen I thought was a mess. Did not care for that. The Joseph Sproul Drive Through Red was okay. I could have even maybe put that in the not bad section. It wasn't terrible. It wasn't as bad as some of these other beers. But that didn't wow me. And then there's this Boatswain family, Boatswain IPA, Double IPA, HLV Ale. Those are in cans. Those are $5 for a six pack. And I thought the whole Boatswain family was pretty much worth ignoring.
Okay.
Again, you sort of get what you pay for. I would not counsel anyone to, go down that avenue if you're looking for beer at Trader Joe's.
All right. If you missed any of this, you need to get to, the Tribune. You can pick up a hard copy or you can go to the website. The story, how are those Trader Joe's, Costco's and Aldi beers? We taste 30 in time for Super Bowl shopping. Josh is also the author of Barrel Age Stout and Selling Out, Goose Island, Anheuser-Busch and How Craft Beer Became Big Business. What's the next story we should be looking for in the Trib?
Ooh.
I'm like your editor all of a sudden. What are you doing next, Josh? Come on, let's go.
Well, I for a second I couldn't remember, but I do remember now. But I'm actually going to keep it under my hat for the moment. I think it'll have a big bang when people see it. At least it's a little counterintuitive, and I think people enjoy reading about it. But I'll give you the heads up in email, and if you want to talk it over, then I'll be around.
That sounds great. We love talking beer, Josh. It was a pleasure. We will talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brian.
Take care. That's Josh Noel. You can read him in the Trib and get the book. On the other side of the news, Cody has issues with refrigerators, and we'll get to all of that. And there's so much more. You can hear the sounds that matter. Oh, of course, the Top 5 at 5 from the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantes, weekday afternoons on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. 5 o'clock with the news, Pam Jones. Roger Badish has wandered in, and I must say, I was a little disappointed in you this week. I was expecting some sort of polar vortex calamity. I was expecting you to be, you know, you've run outside naked and stuck yourself to a pole. I was expecting your car to have launched into the lake off some sort of ice bridge. Nothing. All I see is your home safe and sound. And that's not the Roger Badish that I count on to give me fodder for Sunday's broadcast. I need you to go out and do something in your usual way that I can say, oh, I feel bad, and then make fun of.
Yeah, well,
how did you manage this? You survived.
I was surprised myself. I was surprised myself. Seriously, I was thinking that, oh, I'll go out and start the cars, and they'll find me frozen in one of them.
Yes,
you know, in the parking lot. That didn't happen. Surprisingly,
did they start? Did your car start?
Actually, they did. I had an appointment on Tuesday afternoon, and then from Tuesday afternoon through, I think, Thursday midday. So for two full days, untouched.
Okay.
We didn't start them up. We didn't do anything. I came out Thursday afternoon when I saw that it was going to start warming up.
Sure.
And we needed the cars on Friday.
Sure. And when by warming up, you went, hey, it's going to get to zero. Let's go crank up the cars.
Exactly.
It's going to be exciting.
So I was thinking, well, all right, my car will start right up. And Bridget's maybe I might have trouble with.
Okay.
It was the other way around.
Yours is newer.
And I use it a lot more than she does. And hers had been sitting there longer than two days, actually. I got into hers because it was first in the line. And boom, right up.
Nice.
No problem. Excellent. So I cleared off the windows and for her of the snow and everything.
Very nice.
And then I turned hers off, went over, started mine. And mine did a little and then started up.
Oh, did it?
Yeah.
It was
just
good.
A little cough, and then boom, it started right up.
Nice.
So, we lucked out.
Yeah, I was seeing reports of people not being able to start it, and I mentioned this earlier. I debated all day Wednesday if I should go out, because Molly's car is out in front of the house, and I debated, and then I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. And
well, the one picture that you posted through the window of her car, it looked so lonely out there. It was like, please start me up.
You know, I should have let it be lonely because it was cold.
Yes.
And it did not start. And so The smart thing would have been, but I pulled a Roger Badish. The smart thing would have been, I would have been, once it didn't start, to go back in the house and wait, knowing that I would jump it on Friday and it would start right up because it would be 30 degrees. No. I decide, well, I'm already out. So I'm going to go get my car out of the garage because I said, well, that way my car starts too, and then I'll jump it.
Okay.
Molly's jumper cables, or the jumper cables are in the trunk of Molly's car, which one, I didn't think, first I didn't think I'd get her hood open because it was kind of frozen,
right.
And I'm pounding on it in the middle of the street. First of all, thinking, please open. Second, thinking, I got to get out of this. This is dumb.
Right.
So I get the trunk, the hood open.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've got to try to get the trunk open because that's where the jumper cables are that are now frozen into a coil.
Oh,
so
no.
So as I start to I'm trying to stretch them out, and the plastic on one of the clamps shatters.
Oh, no.
Because it's so brittle and cold. Now, at this point, I still had the option of going back in the house.
Right.
But I'm too invested at this point.
I have infected you.
Right. I'm not. What am I going to? I'm in the middle of this operation. I'm going to stop because now I'm either going to be dead or I'm going to have a great story.
Yeah, and you got a great story.
Well, I have a story. We'll let other people judge the greatness of the story. So my car, thankfully, in the garage, boom, started right up.
And nice.
Lest you think I have a nice heated garage, the window in my garage looked like a sheet of ice. My garage is not insulated.
Okay.
My garage is not heated, but it's enough to keep the car out of the elements.
Exactly.
So my car started up, and I go and I pull it. Now, the weird thing is I expected people to, like, drive by and see. There was nobody on the street.
I know.
It was like zombie apocalypse time.
It was.
And I'm out there, and now I told Debbie I was doing this. I don't know if she looked out the window to see if I was dead, because I've mentioned this before, that when I leave the house, they don't really care.
Right.
So now I'm out, and I'm warm. My head is warm. My torso is warm. My legs, I had, like, running tights on under my jeans. A little cold, but okay. Everything was warm except for my fingertips, and I had two pairs of gloves on.
Two pairs?
Yeah, I'm not messing around. It's 25 below zero. I'm out there, you know.
All right.
Well, thankfully, man, I hook up the car, and it's hard because the clamps don't want to move. Everything's frozen. Boom, the car starts up. I'm like, all right. So
after
now,
you hooked it up,
after I hooked it up,
okay.
So it jumped right away.
Beautiful.
I run into the house. I yell to Debbie, "Keep an eye on Molly's car. I have to pull my car back in the garage." So I don't know where she was in the house, and it's not like, you know. So I can. Right. Yeah, it's not a palatial estate. She didn't have to come from another wing.
Right.
She was like, okay. She and the dogs are looking out the window, nice and warm, and I'm out there, you know, where all you can see is my eyes. So then it was fine. Then I drove it around for about a half hour again. I love the polar vortex traffic. There was nobody on the roads. It was like I was driving through a post-apocalyptic frozen hellscape.
Yeah.
I loved it.
But there were businesses open.
I don't know because I couldn't see out. I had no peripheral vision. I was like a horse with
blinders
because I had so much stuff on my head.
I got you.
So I'm just looking straight out. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, the heat's working. This is great. The windows are... Right. Everything's... All good. Systems are go. Then Thursday, I decided, all right, I'm not going to wait till later in the afternoon. So if I go out early, it's going to start. And I went out about 12:30, and it was... And on the second one, it caught. Boom.
Nice.
So, yeah, it was fine.
Yeah. Well, I had to do it on Thursday.
Yeah, you got to be ready for Friday.
Well, for two reasons. Well, to be ready for Friday, but two immediate reasons.
Yeah.
So I was concerned that the bowling alley would be closed on Thursday night.
Of course. As they should have been.
As they should have been. But... Very unnaturally for the bowling alley, not only were they open, but the heat was working.
Really?
Now, which was surprising.
Let me ask you this, because I had a meeting Thursday night that was canceled and changed to a conference call because people exercised their common sense and realized they shouldn't go out. Now, Thursday night, despite the fact that there was a forecast that it might get to zero.
And that there would be snow coming in Thursday night.
It was still very cold.
Yes.
And I know you love bowling.
Mm-hmm.
What possessed you to leave the house at that point?
Well, I had already gone out after I started the cars. I had to take Bridget's car over to get gas because...
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah, it was
you
down.
You had not gassed up?
Well, David uses it a lot to drive to work Bridget uses it to go see her friends and go to the store.
Are they not able to look at the gas gauge?
Yes, but he hadn't really paid attention to it. So he had forewarned me.
Listen, that's your fatherly duty to drum into people's heads. You got it. It's like milk, bread, toilet paper, and gas in the car. Cody doesn't even have a car. I'm calling him and telling him, make sure you have gas in the car. If you ever buy a car, make sure. I know his dad is doing the same thing because his dad is texting me. Did you tell Cody to put gas in the car? Mm. I did. He's not listening because he hasn't bought a car yet. So, but that if you don't drum into your children and spouse's heads that they have to have gas, that's old school dad. That's like, keep your daughters off the pole, keep your sons from, doing whatever horrible things they're going to do, and tell them to, keep gas in the car.
Well, you know how sometimes after a few seconds I sound to you like I'm a drone, kind of like...
Sure, it's right. You're like Charlie Brown's parents are here right now.
Exactly. So that happens with David. I have told him more than enough times to keep an eye on the car, take care of it. He does a good job, but this time,
like it.
So it was less than a quarter of a tank.
Oh my God! How did your entire gas line not freeze?
It didn't.
First of all, who lets their car get that long gas?
Secondly, apparently my wife and son.
Holy cremoly! wow, this is distressing news. Cody, make a note of this. Somebody has to be alerted. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead. So you had to go get gas, which is
two blocks away.
Right, but it's so pleasant to get gas in that,
But I wasn't the only one, because as I'm approaching it, suddenly cars from every driveway into the gas station started flying in to get a spot. And then so I pull up to one, because her gas tank is on the right side of the car. Mine's on the left, on the driver's side.
Oh, and you don't go to one of those places where you can stretch the hose to either side?
No, you got to be on the correct side or turn your car around. So I pull in, and I got one. And I pull in, and I go around, and I open up the gas tank handle,
cap?
Whatever, the cap.
Gas cap.
Thank you. Yeah, I know what it's called. And I go to grab the hose. And there's a red bag over it saying out of service, which I had not seen driving up because I was so excited to get a spot.
To get the spot, and that's why you got the spot.
So I zoomed forward, zipped the car around, came around on the other side because the spot had opened, and I took care of it. And then I'd take mine out because, of course, I had to get money to play some wagers on bowling.
Wow,
on Thursday night.
You did not adequately prepare for a weather situation that had been forecasted for since the beginning of time.
Why are you surprised?
I'm not. Because now, Cody, you can jump in with me on this. Tuesday, I went to the grocery store. I don't usually buy into the hype, but there were a few things that we needed, and I knew I wasn't going to want to go out. So I went to the grocery store, as young Cody did.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a quick break. Then we'll talk about the grocery store. I'll chastise Roger and his family for not having gas, because I'll wrap up the gas by going this way. Tuesday night, I'm out running around, and I had about a little over half a tank. And I was
not bad.
Oh, come on. For this weather? No. It's woefully inadequate. So I decide I'm going to go get it. And I usually go to Costco right by the house.
Okay.
Whip in, get the gas. They're always cheaper. And they have the hoses are long, so it doesn't matter what side you're on.
Oh, nice.
I think I have never seen this many cars trying to get into the Costco gas station as I did Tuesday night.
Mm.
It was it's a pretty big station. Every aisle was completely packed. The feeder road went about a block, and I'm not exaggerating, a block of people waiting in line just to get then into the main area of the parking lot. I was like, forget it. So I paid a little more, went to a regular old gas station.
Oh, okay.
Paid a little more and filled up because, you know why? I prepare.
And you want to get angrier? I only had half a tank.
All right, I got to go. We'll do this. And then if you want to share stories of how you survived the polar vortex, and if you want to call Roger out on his the fact that he's not preparing his family adequately to survive with their vehicles, like two bags of peanuts? And then I had to go out for groceries. All right, we'll do this in a sec. We were just chastising him because of his lackadaisical auto preparation.
Yeah.
But you mentioned you went shopping Tuesday. Cody, you brought this up before the show that you were... because you're one of these guys, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh,
you don't buy into the hype. So you're not a guy who will panic and run to the grocery store, but I think, like me, you felt, well, maybe we should run to the store Tuesday night just to kind of lay in some essentials.
I figured I'd grab a couple things, yeah. Some of them alcohol-related.
Oh, see? And it was still, I cursed the fact that this was happening at the end of dry January.
Oh, my gosh, that's right, I forgot.
I did not break, even though, boy, those would have been the 2 days to sit back with some bourbon and just relax.
I actually didn't end up drinking it all that day.
No, good for you.
Yeah.
Was you off work there, days? Were you off work on Wednesday Thursday, or did you work from home?
Yeah, 20. I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, I had my one friend, the pharmacist, that had to go in.
Sure.
And I told him, I'm like, you know, yes, it's great. We get to stay home, but there's not really a such thing as a snow day for a lot of industries.
Correct.
Even if it's closed, it's like, oh, well, you got your laptop, you can work anyway, okay. And I ended up working like 9 hours that day.
Holy cow.
So it doesn't, you know.
Yeah,
I know Debbie
was doing some work at home too.
Yeah, it doesn't have the joy it used to have. You know, if you're in school, if you're a kid, like, you stay home, you are donezo.
That's how I took it, because they told us Tuesday that there was no school on Wednesday. I was like, hee.
Well, what about Thursday? Did you?
No school Thursday.
And then they canceled that one, too. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Come on. Thursday morning was as cold as Wednesday morning.
I know. But, you know, I'm thinking, because the grandkids are in Chicago Public Schools. And so
they didn't have school Thursday.
No, but they closed. They announced Wednesday's closure.
Monday.
Mm-hmm. But then they said, we'll let you know Wednesday afternoon if we're going to close Thursday. But then
my district did it, too.
Oh, okay. But they announced it way before that, though.
Yeah.
They finally caved in after the union, everyone got on it, but they finally closed. Now, working from home, our daughter can work from home on the computer, too. About 90% of her job, she's an office manager.
Okay.
So she can run things from home. Problem is, now the two kids are home. And where are they all going to go? Nowhere.
Right.
They're there, too. So it was tough for her, but...
Cody doesn't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Cody just sitting at home in his underpants doing his work.
Pretty soon.
Yup.
So what happened at the grocery store? That was
Remember Y2K?
I do remember Y2K.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. Like, people stocking up. Like they were going to be snowed in for 7 weeks.
That's what I stopped myself. I picked up a couple things that I knew we were going to make for dinner on Wednesday and Thursday, because I figured since we were home, we were going to make some really hearty, warm weather kind of food. So I got that. But then I stopped myself because I was like, I'm going to go out Friday. And if I need to leave the house, I can leave the house.
Right. Yeah.
It's not. I knew the grocery stores would be open, and God bless the people who had to go out and work in those conditions.
And bring the carts in from the parking lot.
Well, that wasn't happening on Tuesday at the Jewel near me.
No.
It was free. You know, it's freezing Tuesday night.
Right.
And I had to park far away because everybody and their mom was grocery shopping. And I walked all the way into the store to find no carts, and I had to walk back out. And I was under my breath. This is how awful of a human being I am. Under my breath, I'm cursing the people who have not gone out to get the carts.
Exactly. Oh, no.
And then
not their fault.
Well.
It's the people who left them out in the parking lot to start with.
Well, what am I put them in you put it in the corral when you're done.
Way too many people didn't.
They just
dumped them right there.
Some kid tried to swipe my cart then. I came in and I stopped and I turned around to look at something and this kid goes, hey, you're not using this, are you? And I go, whoa, 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 whoa. Yes, I am. And I looked at his mom. I said, I'm sorry, but I had to walk all the way back out there to get it. And I'm thinking, this kid's 12. He can walk,
Yeah.
He's young. He's got his whole life ahead of him. I'm almost done. I already walked out there once. I'm not messing with this.
And I worked at a Jewel in high school where we had to go out to the far corner of the parking. And it wasn't just the Jewel lot. The lot was one of these strip malls.
Sure.
So it was huge in the middle of winter, and you had to wear the Jewel jacket. Outdoor jacket.
I don't think when I was a bagger, we had, you know, I had to go out in the lots and get all the, but we didn't have any specialty garments.
Well, that's what you had to wear. No hat, freezing cold, snow drifting all over the place, and the jacket, your shirt is thicker than the jacket they gave us.
Well, that's just wrong.
Somebody
should have put, you were part of a union back then.
Wasn't a great union.
I know it's not a great union, but somebody should say it. So did you buy your toilet paper? How much did you buy, Cody? Would you buy a lot of toilet paper and bourbon? Was that your Tuesday night?
I rented a U-Haul to make sure that I could just fill the whole thing with toilet paper to stock
that's
up
smart,
for that
you never
48
know.
Hours.
Yeah, you don't know what you're getting. You might eat a lot of fiber in those 2 days to stay warm.
Listen, I live 50 feet away from a Lou Malnati's and from a 7-Eleven. I mean, there's no way.
And the weird thing is he made Malnati's deliver.
What?
He made them deliver.
You are sick.
He could have walked down the stairs and gotten it himself. He was like, nope, I'm a one percenter today. And he made that. And you know what he tipped him? Zilch.
Oh.
Because he was like, you only had to come 50 feet.
Isn't it like a penny a foot?
None of that really happened.
But the scary thing is everybody went, hey, sounds like Cody.
sounds
about right.
I would do it. No, I didn't leave that house. No,
I don't blame you.
No reason.
Well, but I did make a treat, though, for Bridget and David. I said, I'm going to make myself a little hot chocolate and a little Bailey's Irish cream. Anyone else want one? And they looked at each other, and they looked at me, and they go, yeah, let me try that.
I would have said, you want one? Go put gas in the car. No, listen, nobody gets Bailey's and hot chocolate if they leave the car under a quarter of a tank. You know what you get?
What?
Nothing. Nothing. You get to go outside. Do we have?
No.
Oh, we don't have to? Okay. I wasn't sure. You never tell me anymore.
I don't like to tell you things.
Assume,
hey, you're so good at radio, Brian, I assume you intuit. I assume you intuit what we have to do.
I am pretty good at this.
No more commercials before the news. We're just, yeah.
Well, it's handy that we're just about to, well, I'm glad you're here. You start your news at 6 o'clock.
Yep.
So Pam's going to do one more. And, I'm glad you're, as much as I tease, I'm glad nothing horrible happened to you. Because I expected, again, I really expected you to be, you weren't the naked guy who was rollerblading, were you?
No, it was a thought for a brief second. But then I said, I don't have any skates, so, you know.
Yeah, and if you're one of those people who went out if you're an influencer, just see the pictures of you love the social media influencers. They were out in, like, workout clothes and just go, oh, it's not that cold. You deserve to be dead. Okay? When the weather monkeys and everybody else is saying, don't go out because the weather can kill you, don't take a deep breath because your lungs could shatter like crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And you decide you're going to go out in a bikini because you want your followers to see how cool you are. I hope you get stuck to a pole and you cannot get back in.
Wow, Harsh. Brian.
That's right, Pam. You know what? Sometimes nature needs to weed out the herd.
You are so cold.
And I'm not talking
What's colder
about
than Chicago's winter?
My heart.
Brian Noonan. That's
and what? I'm not talking about the poor people who are homeless. I'm not, no. If you have the capacity to be inside and be safe and you choose for social media to go outside and throw a wet t-shirt up in the air or pose in your shorts, we don't need you. Thanks for coming. Goodbye. Next. All right. That's right, Cody. I'm taking a hot stance. 5:30 on 720 WGN. Now the woman who has judged me harshly. That's okay.
I love you, Brian. You are so funny. Like, my face hurts when I leave here. You are so funny.
Well, thank you, Pam. The news is sponsored by the Tortoise Supper Club. Here's Pam Jones. We were talking about preparedness for the cold weather as it came up this week. Because most people, I think, took this seriously. From the 331, I'm like you, Brian. I prepare. Sunday, I bought one of those battery chargers. On Tuesday, I filled up my tank and added that gas line treater that prevents freezing. Oh, man. Back when I was a kid, when I first started driving, and before we had a garage, my dad used to put so much heat, is what the gas line stuff was called, that I thought most of the gas tank was full of heat rather than gas. It was crazy. Went to Walgreens, bought two frozen pizzas. My work shut down Wednesday and Thursday. I called off, used my automatic starter 2 to 3 times on both days. Had no problem. Yeah, that's what you got to do. You got to prepare. You know, you must prepare. Cody came in today, and sometimes Cody likes to produce the show and give me ideas for things, and I'm always welcome. I always welcome those, despite them being few and far between. And I say that as a joke. So you came in today, and you seemed a little upset about refrigerators, about company refrigerators.
Yeah.
Now, we have only been in these lovely studios here in the Allstate Skyline studio at our new building since it was the summer, right? Like July is when we moved in.
That it's been that little amount of time. It's only been 6 months.
Maybe summer. Yeah, it was. It was May. Yeah,
that does
it was
sound
sometime.
About right. Yeah. All right.
And we have two full size refrigerators that are already full of garbage, right. And they've been full of garbage since about 4 days into this endeavor. But is that what set you off today, or was this something from home?
I brought in a couple because, you know, I wake up about 10 minutes before I'm supposed to be here.
Right.
On Sundays, I brought in my two multi-grain waffles from Trader Joe's that I had in my freezer.
Okay.
Because I figure I'll get some breakfast. And I look in the two full-size refrigerators here, not a single bottle of maple syrup.
What?
Very upsetting to me.
Why would you imagine that work refrigerators would have maple syrup? And first. And second, who puts maple syrup in the refrigerator?
Everyone puts maple syrup in the refrigerator. A lot of people do.
Do they?
I put maple. I have always put maple. You know what? In fact, my 100% Canadian maple syrup is in the freezer.
Why?
Just to keep it.
How are you going to use it if it's in the freezer?
It doesn't freeze.
Then why put it in the freezer?
To keep it cold.
Why do you want cold maple syrup on hot waffles or pancakes? They actually serve it warm in a lot of places because people don't want cold syrup going on hot foods.
Because sometimes I'm in the mood for cold maple syrup, and other times I'm in the mood for hot maple syrup.
Who's ever that does? I'm sorry, that doesn't make sense to me.
It's easy to make maple syrup hot when it is cold. It is hard to quickly make hot maple syrup cold. So we're at an impasse, Brian. I was surprised that you said. You know, I there are times in the past
when I
have not refrigerated my maple syrup, and I will tell you, it is a different experience. But I think there's something to be said for the experience of having waffles with cold maple syrup.
All right. I will say this. If you are using because I did some research on this.
Mm-hmm.
If you are using 100% pure maple syrup, you should refrigerate it after opening. But if you are using, like right now, Thursday, Debbie asked if I would make pancakes during the polar vortex. And because I'm a good husband, I said yes. And we have a bottle of log cabin syrup in the pantry because Molly wanted pancakes when she was home for Christmas. Now, that's maple syrup, but it's not 100% pure maple syrup, and it doesn't say keep refrigerated anywhere on the bottle, so I do not. I keep it in the pantry. So it is room temperature when I pour it on my pancakes. Still a little too cool. I should, I should actually heat it up. I do remember back in the day we had the one time I splurged on 100% pure maple syrup, and we did keep it in the refrigerator, but then I would microwave it before I used it. There is no chance I'm putting cold maple syrup on hot food. It would cause some sort of thunderstorm, seismic event.
Do you microwave your ketchup when you put on a burger?
I take my ketchup out well before dinner if we are having any sort of condiment. Let's say, for example, if I was going home tonight and we were going to have hot dogs or hamburgers or something that would require mustard or ketchup, I will call Debbie when I leave work and say, please take this out. Or if we're making chili and there's a hot sauce or something, or salsa, and it's in the refrigerator, I will ask her to take it out so that it's at least room temperature before we use it.
Huh.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not putting cold things on my hot food.
All right.
It's counterintuitive. It cools down the hot food. So all right, but that we could debate that all day, because really we don't have anything to do till 6. But we're not going to debate that all day. But I will go back to my original question. It's from the 630. They put a couple people saying they put their syrup in the refrigerator because it's on the label. Mine is not on the label. I checked. But anyway, why would you think that there would be syrup here at work? Do you think they're having pancake breakfast that we're not invited to? What?
Yes.
Check that.
Yes.
So we know there's a lot of things here that we're not invited to.
Do you follow WGN Radio on Instagram?
I do. So, all right, I'll take that part back. Yes, there's a good chance there was some sort of breakfast party that we were not invited to. Boy, it's just like being in high school again. But anyway, did you really think there would be syrup here?
Yeah. I really did. What? At my office at work,
Why? We
have a thing of syrup. I don't know, because we occasionally we have breakfast. Look, you got...
We
all
have
right.
a thing of syrup.
I would expect there to be ketchup and mustard here. Well, maybe not mustard, but ketchup at least, because sometimes you have burgers in or whatever. I don't know. Stuff gets catered. you're in an office where food
but
gets
usually,
catered.
Yeah, but usually those are in packets.
Usually. So why don't we have any syrup packets?
I don't know.
That's a thing that exists.
I know it's a thing that exists.
Do you know what we do have? We have a giant Tupperware, a huge Tupperware thing. You know, like a takeout Tupperware you'd get at a Chinese place or whatever. It is full of grape jelly and strawberry jelly and butter, individually wrapped like the you get at a brunch place. There's a whole thing of them. There's a swath of them.
Now, did you know that prior to your search for syrup? Because given that information, I would say, all right, then there's a pretty good chance there may be some syrup in the building.
I don't know that I was specifically aware of the jelly and the butter, but I was aware that there are other condiments. There's a whole thing of soy sauce in there. Now, I would argue that syrup is more utilitarian than soy sauce.
Well,
or whatever word I'm looking for.
My argument to that, 312-981-7200, have you gone into your office and either been horrified by what was in the refrigerator or what was woefully lacking? And what was your recourse? Do you go to your manager and say, listen, we need something? Because there was something else refrigerator related came up. It's an etiquette question that we'll get to after this. I would counter your point by saying there are more opportunities for people to eat traditionally lunch or dinner type foods here than there are breakfast foods. Because outside of Steve Cochran's show in the morning, because then you get into Bill and Wendy and they're into the lunch hour. So then you'd go, okay, maybe some Chinese food or something coming in, soy sauce, then you're all through the afternoon and late into the night.
Yeah, but the whole sales staff, the whole administrative staff.
But again, you know, you come into work, maybe you've had your breakfast or you have your coffee or your muffin, and then the lunch stuff comes in. So I would assume then that we could have, we'd have soy sauce. But again, a full container of soy sauce does seem a little odd.
It seems like a bit much, doesn't it?
Right. From the 312, I have syrup at work so I can make toaster waffles. Makes work better, I'll tell you that. See, here's the thing. You could bring it in and leave some here, but then you know it'd be gone.
Yeah.
Now, somebody to back up my point. I love people will chime in. They'll help us out at 312-981-7200. My Aunt Jemima syrup container says refrigeration not required. Most people don't put syrup in the fridge. In my 27 years of working at my parent company, no one has brought syrup to work, and if they did, it would be their food, and you shouldn't take it without asking. Perfect, which leads me to the conundrum that was happening in the faculty lunchroom the other day.
Oh.
Because there was a debate amongst teachers regarding condiments, if your name is on them or not on them. The criterion was if your name, there was a huge bottle of ranch dressing that somebody used a little bit of, not a lot, but a little, and it didn't have a name on it. And their argument was, well, if it doesn't have a name on it, it's obviously here for everyone to share. Whereas if somebody has a bottle of salad dressing and they put their name on it, then you can't take that. So name means open season, or name means restricted. No name means open season. And this was the big debate. Because obviously we don't have anything else to talk about. It's cool. I tended to agree with that. I think if somebody just puts...
How can you assume that...
Guess who's back.
Wait a minute. How can you assume that if something is in the refrigerator with no name on it, that you are allowed to use it? If you didn't bring it, it's not yours to use. Thank you, Pam Jones, for agreeing.
All right, listen,
two against one.
Don't take that tone with me, man who doesn't fill up his car before sub-zero temperatures. Don't all of a sudden decide you're going to start laying down the law when you can't even police your own garage.
I'm not worried about my garage.
Come at me.
I'm worried about what's in the refrigerator.
Don't come at me with your attitude if I take a squirt of ketchup when you're risking your entire gas line freezing up because you can't control your car.
I know there will be a thaw. Afterwards, I do not know that my ketchup will still be there because I brought it and you didn't.
All right, first of all, did you bring ketchup?
No, I don't have to bring ketchup.
Of course you don't have
to. I don't use ketchup here.
Do you have a condiment in the refrigerator?
Trying to think. No.
No.
He ran out of ketchup because he put it in his gas can.
Oh, sure, that makes sense.
No, I
didn't. That makes more sense.
I did have something here in a Tupperware container, like an extra meal,
uh-huh.
And it disappeared.
That's wrong.
No, I shouldn't have to worry about putting my name on it.
Right, I said it was wrong. Hey, hold on. Okay. I said it was wrong.
Okay.
You may want to hold your argument until you have something to argue about. Because I was agreeing with you.
He was agreeing.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Cody.
It is so infrequent that you do.
Roger's not listening to this show at all. I don't know what...
Now, Roger's got a point. It is so infrequent that you agree that it's just...
Yeah, really. It shocked me.
How could you ever work at a place that has no maple syrup? Trust me, it's very difficult.
Thank you, 773 Texter. This is what I'm saying.
I would agree that overall you shouldn't just take things that aren't yours. But if in a pinch you need a squirt of something and there's no name on it, if there was a name on it, I would text you and go, "Hey Roger, I'm at work and I need a little ketchup. Can I have a squirt of your ketchup?"
I would say yes.
Sure, of course you would. Or I would take a squirt of your mustard, and then when I saw you on Sunday, I'd say, "Hey, I used some of your mustard. Here's 7 cents. Relax, big spender."
I wouldn't worry about the seven cents.
Of course you wouldn't. But in a pinch, if there's no name, I can't get it. And what am I going to do? Not eat?
No, you do what I do.
You complain and then argue with people who agree with you?
She's going crazy over here. She is going crazy.
You're
going
to kill Pam, Brian.
I'm sorry. Blueberry syrup needs refrigeration, by the way, from the 847. All right. Hang on, we got to do this, and then we'll get to the bottom of this one way or another. So this is, all right, this is the debate. If there's a name on it, obviously you don't take it. What if there's no name and you need just a little bit of a condiment? I'm not talking about somebody's meal. If there's a meal in Tupperware, that's somebody, you know, somebody's going to eat that. You don't just take that. But what if somebody gets a delivery of something here and it's in there? We don't know if it was from, was it contributed? All there's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of office politics. You feel free to jump in, 312-981-7200. Again, our ability to tap into the most divisive topics. A hot talk just rolls on at WGN. Your work fridge, if condiments do not have a name, do you feel free to use them? And I'm not talking about taking a ton of it. But if you need a little bit and there's no name, okay. Now, obviously, you didn't bring it in. So maybe then you bring in a bottle and leave it open and let everybody else use that one too. I think that that's fine. We had a guy from the 708. We had a guy who would take extra juice at meetings for himself, and he would put the extras in the refrigerator. When they came up missing one day, he wrote a nasty note and called everyone dirty dogs. Well, he's a jerk because those were not his juices to begin with. Listen, Brian from Montana, work refrigerators are understood to be communal unless you put your name on it. Yes. From the 331, condiments with no name are free to use. I'd argue it requires a date as well. Let's see. I had salad dressing labeled with my name and room number in the fridge in the lounge. I walked into the lounge to find my boss swiping it from the fridge because she had forgotten hers. Now, that's unconscionable. If there's identifying marks, you ask permission. You know? But if people put stuff in the fridge and don't label it, they want to share it or forget about it. That's from Carrie. See, Roger, a lot of people disagreeing.
We have a benefit here that almost everybody doesn't have their own office.
Most of us.
Okay. Which is everybody.
The proletariat, the working man does not have an office.
Yeah, right. So we have little lockers. Little YMCA.
Bus station lockers.
Yeah. Bus station lockers. You're right. Bus station lockers. Yeah.
Just like being at the bus station.
Yeah.
Which is how I take my shower. Here
right.
Too,
which is why I bring a lot of quarters with me.
Yeah. Well, that's for the booths you stop at on the way. But that's a whole other story.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You won't talk about that. So since I understand most human behavior in a workplace environment, having been in more than my fair share of them over the decades, I keep those things that I would love to share, but that I want to make sure are there when I'm at work in ample supply so that I am not wanting. And sure. I keep those locked in my locker.
As you should.
Right.
But you also bring in things and leave them out without names on them, and people are free to share them.
And I'm okay with that, but I don't leave them in the refrigerator. With the exception of that one dinner.
Right, but if it was...
But I hadn't eaten half of it.
I understand. No, you know? I'm not arguing that them taking your dinner was right. That's obvious. Plus, who's going to eat somebody's half-eaten dinner? That's just creepy.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. Mike wants to weigh in. Hi, Mike.
Thanks for taking my call. Roger, I back you 100%. The rule is, if you don't put it in, don't take it out. Don't be a freeloader. We had this problem at work. First, it starts off with the condiments. Then it goes to the beverages. Then it's the dinners and the desserts. And they think it's for anybody. So what you have to do is you have to put in something when you know somebody that mooches is there, and you spike it with an X-Lax or a blood thinner like Coumadin.
Oh, my goodness.
They'll learn their lesson.
Wow. That's harsh, but thank you for the call. We cannot condone that. That is, I've heard that kind of thing. Again, if somebody has a name on it, Mike making the case that condiments are a gateway drug to thievery, full-blown thievery. So if I take a squirt of mustard, next thing you know, I'm taking a full turkey dinner. I don't see the correlation. I'm not sure if I can make that, if I can go along with Mike on that jump. That giant jump. And I also can't see potentially poisoning my coworkers because I lost a Sprite. That seems like a gross overreaction. Again, I'm not the kind of guy, you know, I haven't done this because I don't bring things. I bring what I need and then I eat it, you know. So if people want to use ketchup at work, you've got 30 people each bringing a bottle of ketchup and there's a bunch of ketchup in the fridge taking up all the room. Yes, I think if you don't want somebody to use it, you put your name on it. If you put something in there, because quite frankly, how long does it take to go through a bottle of ketchup? It's not like we're making tomato soup with it here. There, you know, a bottle of mustard is going to last a long time. Even if every day somebody took a squirt of mustard, it's still going to last you a long time. If you put your name on it, that's it.
But Pam made a point that you may take a squirt of mustard and later in the day someone else may take a squirt. And as the week goes on, when you walk in for your squirt of mustard on whatever sandwich
put your
you're
name
putting
on
together,
it.
There's no mustard
put
left.
Put your name on it. Then nobody's going to take it.
But and if you shouldn't have to worry about that.
Well,
that's
see,
what I'm saying.
Yeah, but how do you know what's community property and what's not?
If you... Like we just said, if you didn't put it there, you don't take it out.
There's a lot of things you don't put here. I didn't put any of this stuff in the. I didn't put any of this stuff in the newsroom when you're there when you put your crazy candies and your pastries out. But it's out, so you kind of know it's in the refrigerator and it's not labeled. You know, again, you're not taking the whole bottle. And I'll be happy. You know what? And if I know that I've used the community mustard or what I've mistaken for the community mustard, mm-hmm. You know what I'll do? Next time I'm at Jewel, I'll drop $1.89. I'll bring in a new bottle of mustard to put in.
Which is what I've done before.
Sure.
You know, you add. But I think we're talking about the extreme cases where you know the people who come in, use the stuff, don't tell anyone. They'll use the last bit of it. They won't ask anyone. They won't ask around. And they won't replace.
Wow.
This is what we're talking about.
Yes. This is why.
Here, in the back.
Here's the thing, friends. We're at work. We shouldn't be eating anyway. Come in here and go to work.
Right.
Nobody needs to be eating
we
here.
We do need to eat.
Nobody needs to be eating here. We're here to work.
Humans need to eat, Brian.
Eat before you come to work and eat after you're done with work.
I'm here for 8 hours.
You're here to work.
I am legally required to eat.
15-minute break.
By law.
Really, we're on the air for 4 hours.
Oh, you're four and his four.
If you're here for eight hours, you're doing it wrong.
I have podcasts.
I'm here for 8 hours.
There's not a chance that what you podcast from this show takes you 4 hours.
I am lauded by the WGN Radio audience for my podcasting quickness and speed.
Well, that takes away from your point as it is. If you can do it so fast and speedy,
no, it's
you
because
don't need
I
four
stay.
Hours.
It's because I stay after the show to do it. I don't go home and do it.
Boo hoo!
It's because I stay. Extra
My point
time.
Is bring something you can consume self-contained: a protein bar, perhaps a gerbil-like water bottle that you strap around your neck.
I have
something
chicken
like
teriyaki.
That. That's see too much effort. You're going to leave some of that somewhere. There's going to be a sesame seed. Somebody's going to eat it. You're going to have a conniption. I don't know what's going on in this place anymore. Listen, somebody needs to take this place to task. You know, people coming in, they're eating, they're lounging around. What do we think this is? This is not Club Med. We're coming in here to work. We got to sweat to make this rare. This is not easy.
Sounds like there's a lot of fun being had in the newsroom,
Brian. Yeah, there's too much fun in the newsroom. That's the problem.
I'm just sitting here.
How about you do this?
I'm just sitting
here. How
about
you bring a nice insulated bag and you keep your own stuff in there? Why do you think I don't even use my locker? Why do you think I walk out of this place like a bag man every time I'm here?
Oh, by the way,
everything I need right on me.
I've been meaning to talk to you about that locker.
If I never come back, there's nothing here that I need.
Can I rent the locker?
No,
you're not using it.
I got to do this. You know what? Then we're going to have something to eat after this because our friends from the Trotter Project are going to come in and join us. Oh, the Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Team Hochberg. But right now, I am very happy to welcome into the studio Tyler Jorstad and Chef Ian Vokes. Tyler is with the Trotter Project. They are having a big night of cocktails and fundraising Tuesday, February 12th at the Three Squares Diner. Three Squares Diner is at 1020 West Lawrence. Welcome to both of you. Very glad to have you here. Good to see you.
Hey, it's great to be here,
Tyler. Tyler's very nervous that he is going to dry up, but you'll be fine. Just get up nice and close to that microphone, and it's just us. Don't think about anybody else out there. It's just us hanging around.
Oh, this water is saving me here.
That's good. So we're all familiar with the great Charlie Trotter. What is the Trotter Project?
The Trotter Project is a 501c3 nonprofit. We're about to celebrate our five-year anniversary in June. Our mission is to carry on the legacy of Chef Charlie Trotter and his incredible legacy of mentorship and excellence through creating scholarships and community youth programs for the next generation of hospitality and culinary leaders.
So where do the nominees or the potential winners, where do they come from?
Right here in the city of Chicago.
Okay.
Some of our underserved neighborhoods. From there, they
are these students or
we serve K through 12. Okay. We have some really exciting community garden projects coming up this summer. But also, as far as the scholarships go, the scholars are here in Chicago, but they are attending universities and culinary and hospitality programs all over the country, from Iowa to Florida to New York.
Very nice. So you said this is the fifth year for the scholarships. What have I'm sure there's success stories with the first four winners. What are they up to?
With this event that we're doing with Three Squares, we have we like to utilize all of our scholars for our all of our events. And Esme Lorenzo, a second year scholar from Washburn Culinary Institute, she's going to be with Ian Vokes here, making some amuse-bouche with us.
Oh,
we like to.
I love to say amuse-bouche, but I can't remember what it is. I feel now Ian's looking at me with such judgment and shame.
I love it too.
What is a amuse-bouche?
It's like a one or two bite, something to sort of start your night.
It sounds fancier than just one bite.
To awaken the palate.
Oh, all right.
So when you're there,
my bouche amused.
Yeah, it's like you're there and you're ready to eat a meal and you get a little one or two bite that's just delectable and you're like, I can't wait for the rest of the meal to come.
Ah, very nice.
Amuse-bouche,
sure, of course. Mm-hmm. Wow. I feel like I learned something, but I also feel dumb for not knowing exactly what that was. So Tyler, you what are you looking for these scholarship recipients? Obviously they want to go into the hospitality industry, the culinary industry. They're looking at, but what sets the people who've won up to this point the scholarship, what sets them apart from the other people who are, also studying that and aspiring to follow in Chef Trotter's footsteps?
When we look at our possible scholarship recipients, we like to see just a lot of enthusiasm and the spirit of Charlie Trotter, which is just to bring a lot of excellence into every area of life.
Yeah.
And so we don't just think about our scholars in the kitchen. We think about them in all areas of the culinary and hospitality industry.
And so you're looking, this is something, while the scholarship is once a year, this is a project that goes on throughout the year. You mentioned you had some different programs for K-12. Obviously, kindergartners are not, toiling away in kitchens somewhere, hoping one day be a chef. But some kids are already, they're helping cook at home. They're thinking about that stuff. Besides the community gardens that you mentioned, what other things for young kids does the Trotter Project do?
Last year, we launched our first ever summer school culinary program, which is really exciting.
That sounds really cool. For what ages is that?
That's in the middle school.
Okay,
middle school range. Yeah.
And what is that? Is that public school? What who can be involved in that?
We work with a number of schools all over the city in the underserved neighborhoods of Chicago.
And what are they? What are these kids? What did they learn in their first summer? Because it's a skill. Even if you don't want to, if you don't aspire to be a chef like Ian, it's good to know how to cook. So what were they showing these kids during the summer?
Absolutely, we like to bring an educational program that. Kind of takes on the entirety of the process. The farm to table movement has been huge lately, and we like to kind of honor that and bring that to like a garden to classroom style.
I think one of the things that Charlie Trotter was known for was bringing seasonality to the forefront. Okay. And so a lot of that's something like community gardens within Chicago. You're only working with the ingredients that you have on hand. And luckily within Chicago in the summer, you can grow a lot of things.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the winter, it can be a little bit harsher and you sort of have to scrounge around. But the idea that Charlie Trotter brought around was that you should be using the ingredients and having them be the focus of a lot of things and doing things simply and just having, like, literally pull this potato out of the ground and serve it. Very minimally, you know, applied, and you'll have the best tasting potato that you've ever had. And sort of,
and if something's out of season, it's out of season. You can't,
we're not going
to bring it in from around the globe.
Yeah, it's like, especially in Chicago, all right, you're not going to have tomatoes right now.
Yeah.
Things popping up like that. So, you know, something as simple as that, I think Charlie Trotter was a big influence on a lot of people in the world, and even with me too, you know. And so with these kids and doing their summer projects and community gardens, I'm sure they have a lot of hands-on projects that are showing them how to cook with what's available.
Yeah, that's very cool. Now, Ian, what's your background? What, before you became the chef and owner, the executive chef and owner at Three Squares, what was your story?
I've been cooking professionally for about 15 years now, mostly within Chicago. I studied a lot under Jeff Morrow, who's also a Charlie Trotter alum, at Jam Restaurant. And just recently, this past June, I opened Three Squares Diner with the people from Jam as well.
Oh, okay.
So I'm starting my own venture there.
Very nice. And we'll find out more about Three Squares Diner in just a minute. I know, Tyler, you thought you were off the hook because I started talking to Ian, but I'm going to ask you this again. So tell us what people can expect if they come to this, because the event on the 12th is open to the public. People can come in, and it's no charge, correct?
Correct, yeah.
So people can come to this night of fundraising. You want to give some money. If you're coming in for something, you know, cough up some dough to keep the project going. What can they expect when they come, besides amuse-bouche, which I'm very excited now to, you know, I have to ask, did the middle schoolers, when they came to the summer, did they know what amuse-bouche was?
Everybody does except for you, Brian. I'm sorry.
All right. That's fine. What can we expect when we show up at Three Squares Diner on February 12th?
You'll see me. I'll be bartending.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Are you a bartender?
By trade, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, very nice.
And we are teaming up with our corporate sponsor, Treaty Oak Distillery. They are new to market.
I was going to say, I have not heard of them before.
Yeah, they have a line of whiskey and gin. And so we'll be mixing up some cocktails.
Very nice.
With that.
So they're the corporate sponsor. Where are they out of?
They're out of Austin, Texas.
Oh, a very hip and trendy Austin, Texas. Yeah. We love it down there. So we're going to try some of that. So they'll come in. They can try some of these wonderful cocktails from Treaty Oaks. And they can have some amuse-bouche. And they can mingle. And will all the past scholars be there? All four? I know you said the second year... Esme Lorenzo is going to be there. Will the other recipients be there as well?
We're inviting all of them.
Hoping they will show up. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Treaty Oaks. We'll talk about Three Squares Diner. And I will remind you to go to thetrotterproject.org, and you can get all the information about the Night of Cocktails and Fundraising at Three Squares Diner. It is an industry night that is open to the public from 5 to 9 on February 12th, Tuesday, February 12th. So go and check that out. We'll talk more with the guys on the other side. It is WGN. Tyler Jorstad from the Trotter Project is here, and Chef Ian Vokes from Three Squares Diner. He is the executive chef and owner. He's also was also chef at Jam in Logan Square. They are here because the Trotter Project is having a wonderful event on Tuesday, February 12th, from 5 to 9 at Three Squares Diner, which is at 1020 West Lawrence. It is to help raise funds for the Trotter Project. If you go to trotterproject.org, you can get all the information. Now, Tyler, you said you were a bartender, and we are the corporate sponsor for this event is Treaty Oak Distillery. Now, you said they're new to the market. How hard is it for a brand? Obviously, you're working closely with them. How hard is it for a brand to break into a market like Chicago, where people are willing to try new things, but we're pretty set in what we like to drink? Is it tough for a new brand like this to come in?
I think when it's this good, I don't think they're going to have too much of a difficulty.
Very nice. So, what did you have a lovely concoction over there that.
Yeah, I brought a couple.
Yeah, what do you got?
A couple cocktails for you today. One is a kind of a riff on an aviation with their Waterloo Number 9 gin. A lot of lavender in that gin. Thank you, Cody. I played with it with an aviation.
Ooh. Did you create these drinks?
I did, yeah.
What is it's the gin, it's the Number 9 gin, the
Waterloo.
Treaty Oak Waterloo gin.
Waterloo. Yeah,
Waterloo gin. Okay, and what else is in there?
There is some cherry liqueur, some homemade lavender syrup,
ooh,
and a little bit of lemon juice.
It's delicious. Light, refreshing. It makes you forget that it's, freezing outside.
Yeah, if you close your eyes.
Yeah, you think, oh, I'm sitting somewhere warm on a veranda with a nice warm breeze blowing over me. In your experience, do people, I know gin very popular. I was just in London. Everybody over there drinks gin. Clear liquor versus whiskeys, is there an edge? Does one have an edge here in the city more so than another?
Oh, I think it's all about the whiskey in Chicago. But
yeah. But gin, gin can battle to for dominance.
It's not going anywhere.
It's not going anywhere. This is delicious. So they're coming into the market. Are they available? Can we go to a Binny's or our local liquor store and pick them up?
Yeah, they're new to market. They're getting into more places. The best place to get the full lineup of Treaty Oak liquor is at Provisions in Uptown.
Okay.
Actually, right around the corner from Three Squares Diner.
Three Squares Diner, which we're going to get into because I've been looking at the website. And as I said to you, and whoever does the pictures on the website, man, oh, man, if the food tastes half as good as the pictures make it look, this place is going to be go gangbusters. So you mentioned you opened in June. You've been at Jam, so you're used to being in a place that's doing pretty well. What are the challenges when you're opening a new place? Because it's conventional wisdom says it's always tough opening a new restaurant, even if you've done this before.
Yeah, absolutely. I think some of the hurdles that we've experienced while the past 6 months have been just sort of getting people aware of the business.
Yeah,
everybody has their go-to spots or places that they want to check out or the hot new places. And if you're not, on the pulse exactly about everything, you can miss spots. And within Chicago, there are new openings and closings every week.
Yeah, every week.
It's outrageous. You know, you can sort of catch up on things every couple months, but trying to keep up with that on a regular basis can be tough. So for us, it's being known and having people be aware of us and know that, they're going to get great food and great service at our place, and we want them to come back. And we're just off the Red Line, just a little bit east of the Aragon. So we're able to sort of touch base with a lot of late night crowd with the Aragon, the Riviera, the Green Mill is right there.
Okay.
We're just a block away from all of those venues. And so we're able to sort of try to capitalize on a little bit of that, as well as, the Uptown Theater is, they just got that big... I don't know who put the money forward, but they got $75 million to open that place up within 2 years. So that's a big plus.
Oh yeah,
and Double Door is opening just a couple blocks from us too.
So you're right in that neighborhood. And people here, Diner, how do you put a new twist on? Diners are historic, and people love diners for all the right reasons: the hours, the food. How do you then take that concept and turn it and make it your own?
We try to take something as like a title of a dish, let's say like a meatloaf sandwich,
okay,
and we'll apply maybe a different technique to it, where we'll take the meatloaf and think of it as more of a classic dish and think about the terrine mold, and we'll take pork and chicken as our proteins instead of ground beef, which is more of an American classic as far as diners are concerned.
Right.
And we'll think about it more in classic terms. And so I actually brought a sample of that with me today, where it's basically like a country pate that's got folded pistachios and dried apricots in it. And we also spread a little chicken liver mousse over the top to give it a little richness.
Wow.
But it's, you know, what we do is what we call it a meatloaf sandwich on the menu. And that's just the title of it, which can be very unassuming and can be unexpected for when people see what they arrive. Of course, we describe the dish on the menu. It's not like we totally surprise them. And it's like, here you go. Here's your meatloaf.
This is nothing like meatloaf.
Where's the ketchup, you know?
Where's the brown gravy? Where's the beef? But people are looking for that, right? While they want the feel of the and the comfort of a diner, they still want to elevate the classic cuisine of that diner to something a little nicer, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and you know, we're trying to be as conscious as possible with things like that, where we take into account where we source our food, because we think it's really important and responsible for a restaurant to do such things. You know, think about the long term effects of where you can source your proteins or your produce or your grains, you know, sort of thinking about the future a little bit more. And so, you know, we'd love to load up everything with a bunch of fat and cream and butter and make everybody happy with that meal. But at the same time, you know, you can't do that with every meal. And we understand that, you know, we'll be able to make things delicious as, you know, a la Charlie Trotter, you know, use the ingredients simply and let them shine.
Right.
And not have to, you know, loaded up with unnecessary ingredients.
And obviously for chefs, the farm to table movement was a big thing. When did you see that start trickling down to patrons, where the people now are really paying attention to, you know, they go into a place like Three Squares Diner or another restaurant and they go, oh, I like to know where my food came from. When did it pass from just an industry thing to everybody being cognizant of this?
It's hard to pinpoint that. I think, you know, menus we saw more frequently than within the past 5 or 7 years have been noting farms on their menus in particular. And so people are, you know, noticing, and they'll see farm names more frequently at different places that they'll go to, which makes them ask questions when they're there.
Yeah.
And they'll say like, oh, well, where do you get your eggs, or where do you get your pork? Because I saw Berkshire at, you know, this X restaurant or whatever. And you know, like, where do you get yours? You know, and they like to have that conversation because it gives it a more personal touch. And I think that people, when they go out, they're looking for more of that as well. They're like, I want to be more connected to the restaurant. It's not just this plate of food. It's everything. It's the ideology behind the place.
Right.
And it's a lot more that they're thinking about. And so I don't know, I think it's within the past 5 or 10 years that people have been much more conscious of it, and I think for the better.
I mean, obviously chefs have a strong feeling about this. For people who still are not really clear on this concept, is there a big difference in flavors? Is if I have something that's obviously, you know, vegetables, freshness is at the forefront there. But like with meats and stuff, is there a big difference?
Yeah, there absolutely is. I think, you know, on a on a very tangential level, like the happiness of the animal can also be portrayed in how you taste it. That goes from the feed that you give it. If you don't feed it a bunch of sort of unnecessary grains or corn, you know, it's not a singular diet. It's more of a balanced diet that gives them a lot more nutrients naturally. Then you'll see that production within the tissue of the meat. And so something like that can take a major effect, as well as sort of the care of the animals, you know, whether or not they're kept in confined cages or restraints can also affect, you know, tissue and, you know, the farm.
Really?
And sort of like the feed. Okay. And a lot of that, you know, when farms are large and have a lot of livestock is a lot of the runoff from the livestock, so to speak.
Okay, gets back
and in. And so, the... you know, it's like a lot of that will be refed then to them, you know, either indirectly through the feed that they get that they also grow around the farm and sort of things like that. It's sort of, it's very cyclical. And so okay. if you're able to have a little bit more control with that by, you know, treating your animals a little bit better and feeding them a little bit better feed in a sense, then, you know, it just continues on that path and can make a bigger difference in the texture and flavor of what you're eating.
Very nice. We'll talk about some of the food that you brought, talk a little bit more about Three Squares Diner and the big event that is happening for the Trotter Project at Three Squares Diner, a night of cocktails and fundraising. It is open to the public, no cost to get in, but then you will be, how's it, well, you can tell us how it's going to work. Because if it's no cost to get in, Tyler, we got to figure out how we're going to get people to get, are you going to shake them down? Are you going to pick their pockets? We'll talk about that after the news. But if you want to learn more about the event, you can go to the Trotter Project. .org. ThreeSquaresDiner.com is the website for the Three Squares Diner, which is at 1020 West Lawrence. More with Tyler Jorstead and Ian Vokes on the other side of the news. We got to do this, and then it is news time on 720 WGN. In studio with me, Tyler Jorstead from the Trotter Project. He is also mixing up some drinks at their big night of cocktails and fundraising. The Trotter Project will be doing that at Three Squares Diner, 1020 West Lawrence in Chicago. It's Tuesday, February 12th from 5 to 9, thetrotterproject.org. We were talking, and Chef Ian Vokes is here. He is the executive chef and owner of Three Squares Diner, and he's brought in some tasty food that we will talk about in a moment. But Tyler, you were saying that you're fairly new with the Trotter Project, and for people who weren't here at the beginning, the Trotter Project, besides the scholarship, you work with underserved schools to try to help out. And you were saying, you know, you're seeing some of the projects as you went down to the South Side, some of these schools. You guys are doing good work with these. And just a quick recap, some of the programs that you're doing with some of these underserved schools.
School garden projects, vegetable gardens. Which they learn to grow the food and then also cook them in the classroom. Culinary summer camps, where students get to go to the farm and see where the food's being made, and work with some of our globally recognized wonderful network of chefs that we team up with them with our students.
And in a lot of these neighborhoods, it's great to teach these kids how to grow their own stuff, because a lot of these schools are in these food deserts where they don't have access, you know, they're not running out to the Jewel or Trader Joe's or whatever. So if you could teach a kid, listen, if you have just a small patch of ground in the back of your building, you can grow some things and you can eat, you know, you can have some healthy, good, healthy things to eat.
Yeah, a lot of our students have never cooked before.
Yeah.
And it can be a really empowering experience for them. So we try to deliver that experience for them so they can feed themselves and feed their community.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really rewarding, empowering experience.
Very worthwhile organization. Now, we've mentioned before that you can go, that this is open to the public on February 12th at Three Squares Diner. We also know that Ian and Esme Lorenzo, who was the second year scholarship recipient of the scholarship through the Trotter Project, will be making a moose bouche, which I learned is just basically small bite appetizers. But they like to dress it up so it sounds fancier than it, you know. I like it. It's intimidating and yet accessible. A moose bouche. So it's no charge to come in, but it's a fundraiser. How are we going to get money out of these people? Because let's be honest, Tyler, it's all nice to get people to give people nice, wonderful drinks from made with Treaty Oak Distillery Gin and Whiskey, which is the corporate sponsor. That's all well and good, but we got to get some dough out of these people. How are we going to get the dough out of them?
Well, we're going to make them drinks, and
perfect.
The drinks are not free.
Ah, there so you go. Good. Okay.
There's that. We also encourage anybody to visit our website at thetrotterproject.org and help support our mission.
Very nice. Yeah. So besides this lovely gin drink that you made, which is, you said a takeoff on an aviator, was that correct?
Aviation.
Aviation. What other kind of drinks, what other specialty drinks will you have that night?
I've also got a final word.
Okay.
Given Brian Noonan a final word.
Oh, very nice. I like that. Is that in here too?
It is, yeah.
Oh, see, Cody only brought me one.
Oh, I think Cody took the
Cody took the other
final word.
What was the final word made of?
You got the final word. It's with Treaty Oaks Red Handed Rye Whiskey.
Ooh.
A little green chartreuse, lemon juice, and some cherry liqueur.
It sounds delicious.
It was delicious.
It was? See? All right. I hope you're happy.
I figure you get to sample one, I get to sample one.
Sure.
Look, I'm a whiskey guy.
You are a whiskey guy.
And I smelled it, and I was handing you the one, and I smelled the other, and I thought
you
to myself,
snatched it.
You know, no, but...
That's good. So how did you like it?
Every ingredient you just said popped out. I mean, I could taste the lemon, I could taste... It was just really good.
All right.
Quasalia is really good.
This is incentive to get to a Three Squares Diner on Tuesday, February 12th. From 5 to 9 to enjoy one of these and help out the Trotter Project. All right, let's go back to Three Squares Diner and Ian Vokes. So you brought in a couple treats. Now, we mentioned you were talking about the meatloaf sandwich before.
Yeah.
Because people will go, oh, it's a diner. That's I love diners. I can go in and get, you know, biscuits and grill, whatever. But you are elevating things a little bit. So what have you brought in today?
Yeah, like we said earlier, we have the meatloaf sandwich, which... We treat it like a tureen, and
explain that term for people.
Tureen is basically the mold that it's baked in.
Okay.
So we have pig and chicken, maybe the not so desirable parts of those animals.
Okay.
We use that together and sort of form the loaf. We bake it in water, and then we press it so that it sort of presses together and all the fat congeals and creates this beautiful texture within. And you'll see on a cross section, you'll see these beautiful pistachios and apricots and this interwoven of pork and chicken within the meatloaf. And it's then we just slice it,
sounds
warm
delicious.
It, and serve it on a sandwich with some pickled vegetables and crispy ciabatta bread and some chicken liver mousse. So there's a lot going on.
It sounds
When you try it, you'll just know that it's a bite that you'll want to continue to have.
It sounds delicious. I can't wait. And what else is that? Was there something else?
Yeah, we brought a couple of things here. We also have a chicken sandwich, which is one of our more popular items. Our chicken is to die for.
Really?
Yeah. It's
what makes it. What sets it apart?
We brine it for a couple of days with a lot of dried chilies, and then we use a hot rub that we make in house. That's got. I feel like I'm stealing KFC's line or something.
No,
like, 10 magic spices.
Listen, chefs are mad scientists to a certain extent. They're artists and scientists. And so, yeah, it makes sense that you would have a lot of different. I just put salt and pepper on it. Boring. That's not a chef. That's some guy who's cooking a chicken breast for the first time.
Yeah, so we spice it up. So all of our chicken is specifically hot.
Okay.
And it's not blow you away hot. But it does have a little bit of kick to it. And yeah, we brine it for 2 days. We marinate it for another day in the spices.
Okay.
And then we fry it and serve it with a little bit of blue cheese dressing on a bun, basically, with lettuce and tomato. And it'll keep people drinking, especially on the night. You have a little bit of heat and you're like, oh, just keep sipping on this drink that also sort of complements it, like the aviation. And
yeah, because if it's a spicy chicken, this aviation, as I mentioned earlier, has a nice summery kind of light feel.
Yeah, I think those two would be a perfect combination and keep you going back for more. So
nice.
I brought that in as well.
Use chicken breast or thigh? Is there a part of the chicken that's more flavorful?
We use the thigh.
Okay.
We enjoy definitely the juiciness that's retained with it.
Yeah.
As well as the application of brining sort of adds more moisture to the chicken sandwich as opposed to the chicken breast. It does have a little bit more fat content, I suppose,
okay.
But if you're going to eat some fried chicken, are you really going to split hairs with that?
Right, exactly. If you've made the decision that fried chicken is the meal, you've kind of gone, all right, tomorrow I go back.
Yeah.
This is my cheat meal. I'm going to enjoy myself. So we've got the meatloaf sandwich, which sounds fascinating. The chicken sandwich. And you guys do breakfast.
You open
at 9 on every day, and so what's what's your take on breakfast?
Our omelet was actually featured by Time Out as one of the 50 best dishes last year in Chicago.
Wow!
And it's
what kind of omelet is that?
We do a French style omelet, so it's going to be a little bit softer.
Okay.
As far as the egg application for it, we also make a sobrasado, which is like a Spanish chorizo,
nice.
To be folded into the omelet as a filling. We have a little bit of fresh queso fresco in there as well. And then we make an aguachile, which is like a salsa that's primarily with cucumbers, jalapenos, and tomatillos and cilantro. So we have all of those components. We like to think of things as a very balanced dish.
Yeah.
So the egg has a lot of richness within the egg, as well as the chorizo has a little bit of heat. But then the queso fresco, sort of like creamy element. Then you have the aguachile, which is like the acidity of it. It's got a lot of different layers to it. And I think it goes really well. And we serve breakfast all day.
All day, okay.
Yeah.
And you're open from 9 to 3 on Sunday and Monday, 9 to 9 Tuesday to Thursday, and Friday and Saturday you are open till midnight for the late night crowds.
Yeah, we actually change on Friday and Saturday nights. We change our menu slightly.
Okay.
For the late night crowd after 9 p.m., we have a little bit more of, I would call it bar-centric food, but still done our way.
Okay.
So it's slightly different. A lot of the offerings are still on our menu. A lot of the hits and the favorites that we're like, we can't deny people this at 11 p.m.
No.
You know, it's like, if somebody wants an omelet at 11, I'll make them an omelet at 11.
I don't blame you. I don't blame
But it's slightly condensed for that late night crowd.
Now, we were talking, Tyler was talking about how some of the kids in the Trotter Project programs have never cooked before. You have made this your vocation. Do you remember the first time you were exposed to cooking, like what age or what you cooked or how you became exposed to it?
I think it was definitely baking. You know, it's like when you're a child and you smell like fresh baked cookies, fresh baked bread. That's like the thing that you just follow your nose and you find yourself in the kitchen and you're like, I'm going to eat that right now.
Right.
And I think that was me with my mom. She was the cook in our household. And so I just remember always just, you know, being on her heels, essentially, I'm sure pestering her, but asking as many questions as I could and burning myself at all times. And, you know, that was sort of my introduction to it, was, you know, sort of experiencing that through our family. And it just continued.
It is an amazing thing, whether you make it your vocation like you did, Ian, or as Tyler was talking about, people just learning how to cook. It is empowering. Once you think to yourself, well, I can take these things that I have in the refrigerator or that I bought at the store and create something, whether it's really simple or very complex, it's a great feeling.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the more valuable skills I think people should have.
I believe
being able to cook for yourself, I think it'll make a big difference in society, I think, if people start cooking for them. Not that they shouldn't come to my restaurant.
No, they should come to listen, you can cook at home and then still go out to eat. There's nothing wrong with going out and having a nice breakfast or going out to dinner and still being able to make yourself, you know, you can make one meal at home and eat a meal out.
Yeah.
No reason
to. But, I mean, that's part of the reason why we partner with the Trotter Project as well, because we like to pass on any sort of skills or trades that we have to people who are willing and you know, scholars and that want to continue the tradition of great culinary aspects of Chicago. So anytime that we have a chance to do that, we'll be like, here, I'll teach you everything I know.
If
you want to listen, you want to continue, then let's do it.
Yeah, it's great to pass that on, and the Trotter Project is doing wonderful work. The trotterproject.org is the website where you can get all the information. The Night of Cocktails and Fundraising is Tuesday, February 12th from 5 to 9 at Three Squares Diner, which is located at 1020 West Lawrence. They will have some lovely bites for you to sample, as well as some drinks for you to purchase. You can go to the trotterproject.org to make some donations and support the cause. And you can check out Three Squares Diner at threesquaresdiner.com. Again, they are open every day at 9 o'clock till 3 Sunday and Monday, till 9 on Tuesday and Thursday, and then Friday, Saturday, they stay open until midnight. So go and support them and support the Trotter Project on the 12th. Tyler, thanks for coming in. How'd your mouth? You stay okay? I know you're worried about being drying out. Did you do all right?
Yeah,
you sounded great. Don't worry about it. You were fine. You were fine. Ian, it's like you've done this a million times before, so I'm not going to worry about you. Thank you both for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Good luck on the event. Again, it's trotterproject.org and threesquaresdiner.com. We'll do this, and then there's more. It's WGN. All right. My thanks again to Tyler Jorstad from the Trotter Project and Chef Ian Vokes from Three Squares Diner. Again, you can go check out the event on February 12th at Three Squares Diner. Go to trotterproject.org or threesquaresdiner.com. Trotterproject.com. I just tried a taste of that meatloaf sandwich that Ian was talking about. It is phenomenal. Very layered, very different, very tasty. Now I'm waiting because here she comes. I didn't even realize that today was such a monumentous day. Karen Conti has walked in. I would sing to you, but my voice would drive you crazy. Happy birthday. I didn't know it was your birthday.
Thank you.
Hold on. That's the wrong mic. There you go. I think you're good.
Thank you.
You're welcome. That's very... I came in today, and they post all the monthly birthdays on the refrigerator.
Oh.
That's how I knew it was your birthday, because it didn't say any... I didn't see... Did I see it on Facebook?
Yes, it was on Facebook.
All right, back off, Roger. Roger's... just to warn you, Karen, for the show, Roger's in a mood today.
Is he really?
No, I'm not.
He's in a little mood. Is it reflective in his news, or is he just doing this kind of personally with
well,
you?
Well, it may just be me.
Okay.
Which I understand. But not. Have you done anything to celebrate your birthday?
Not really.
No, you came in here to do your show.
You know what? Jerry is not a celebrator of birthdays. I love birthdays. To me, how many days do you have that you could call your own? I mean, the first 10 you don't remember. Probably the last 10 you probably don't have much. So you got like, what, a good 60 days maybe? And your whole life you could say, that's my day. And I usually like to make it a big deal for people.
Yeah.
But Jerry's not into it at all.
I'm with Jerry. I don't. I like to celebrate other people in my life's birthday.
Okay.
Like Debbie and Molly. I make a big deal out of their birthdays.
But you don't want someone to make a big deal about yours.
No, not at all.
Oh.
Not at all.
I think what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Probably. And Debbie and Molly agree with you. That's why my wishes are cast aside. So, but wait a minute. He won't even do anything to celebrate your birthday?
No.
I'm going to talk to him. That's wrong.
He just thinks that it's another day. But, you know, again, he should listen to what I want.
Yes, because it is your day.
It is.
Again.
And then he gets all embarrassed when I make a big deal and I have people over to meet to, you know, a little surprise and a little gift. And he's like, I don't want to do that. That's just not, I don't want that attention.
But it's your day.
Yeah.
On his day, I understand. He doesn't want to do anything on his day. Listen, I'll browbeat him afterward.
Please.
I'll corner him out. So he does. Wow. Did he at least say happy birthday?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's it. Just in passing.
Yeah,
I got his way to the bathroom in the morning. Happy birthday.
You want a cup of coffee?
Yeah.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Happy birthday. Oh, yeah. It's that day again? Happy birthday. Really fascinating. It's too bad.
That's all right.
All right.
I can live with it.
Is he going to take you out to dinner at least after the show?
We're going out to Joe's.
Okay.
Yep. A lot of restaurants are closed tonight.
Are they really?
Yeah. Some of our favorite restaurants in our neighborhood are closed.
Is it Super Bowl related?
Super Bowl, yeah. They just get a really small trickling of people, so they just decide to close.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So you're going to Joe's?
Joe's, you can't go wrong with
I'll
that place.
I'll tell you what, that's one of my favorite
places.
That's
a great place. And if you don't like fish, they say the best steak in the whole city.
Yeah, I'm always torn when I go there because I want to have fish, but then I'm like, and last time I had steak and it was as advertised.
It's a great place.
Delicious. Yeah, that's a good spot. So people will, if you want to wish Karen Conti a happy birthday, don't, because she doesn't celebrate it. Or at least Jerry doesn't.
Brian said earlier in the evening that he was going to sing happy birthday to you.
He volunteered me too. I chose not to ruin Karen's birthday by singing to her. I thought a more heartfelt wishing her a happy birthday was better. Would you agree?
Okay.
Yeah, you don't want to hear
me. Yeah, we're not singers.
Listen,
no. If you don't sing, don't start now.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not. Who am I kidding? So we've got the big show. Has there been a lot of the legal wranglings this week?
You know, I want to talk briefly about this governor from Virginia. Should he or should he not resign? The guy who was pictured in his medical school yearbook, which I didn't know you even had one when you were in medical school.
That surprised me too. Like, really?
And there's a picture of somebody with blackface and somebody with a KKK robe. But at first he apologized, and then he said, neither of those is me. So
then why did you apologize?
Yeah, I don't know. And it's all confusing. And, you know, again, should we go back 15 years and hold people responsible for stupid, racist, horrible things they did when they were young? Now, he wasn't that young.
See, that's the line, I think.
But when we went through that with the Supreme Court justice. You know, if what that woman said was true, it's pretty egregious conduct.
Right.
And people said all the time, he was just a young man. You can't hold him responsible for that. His hormones are acting up. Boys will be boys. Again, you know, where do we draw the line? It's an interesting question. I want to have people call in and tell me what they think about it.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I'll be listening to see what people say, because I understand why it's you know, a horrible image. I understand all that. I also am like, I debate with myself. when is there a point where you should, medical school, you should know better? There's absolutely no question. And certain behaviors, grade school, high school, you should know better. Certain behaviors, you know, if you get drunk and, you know, you get arrested for peeing in an alley when you're in high school or college, all right, that's just dumb behavior.
And we have to add to this, too, that he has chosen a public life.
Right.
He has chosen to lead people, and he's chosen to be a representative of his state. Yes. And so you're held to a higher standard.
Exactly.
You know, so do you then, you know, does everybody that runs for public office now have to do something to erase their bad pasts, or do they just not run for office? And then who do we have running for office?
Right. But then, you know, that people say, well, if you say who doesn't have a mistake in their past,
sure.
Well, everybody's got a mistake, but where's the weight of those mistakes?
Exactly.
So it's going to be very interesting. Have a fun conversation.
Yep.
What a way to spend your birthday, debating if a governor is racist or not. It'll be fun.
It's better than sitting home in my apartment with Jerry not celebrating.
Right, exactly. You could be out having a party.
Not to feel sorry for
him. We could have had hats and balloons and noisemakers. We could have been out, you know, at a
Cody jump. Could have dressed as a clown.
He could have.
Yeah.
That would have been creepy.
Yeah, because
his
really
clown costume
creepy.
Doesn't have pants. It's weird. yeah, we could have got a ball pit, all sorts of things. But anyway, you're here, so you
I'm
might
here.
As well have a wonderful show.
Okay,
happy
thanks.
Birthday.
Thank you, Brian.
We will talk to you. All right, we'll talk to you again. Are we off next week, Cody? Yeah, we're off next week because there's a Blackhawks game and a Northwestern game. So we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you soon. Keep your eye on your Facebook page. We'll let you know when we're going to be back. Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is 7 o'clock with the news. A very, very surly Roger Badish.
Only for you, Brian.